It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, and wow, we have such a great panel. I consider them the young Turks of technology. Nick Bilton from the New York Times, Baratunde Thurston from God knows where, and Brian Brushard of Scam School. They're all here to talk about Hurricane Sandy, the big announcements from Microsoft, Apple, and Google, and a whole lot more. It is going to be a wild one. Fasten your seatbelts. TWiT is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 378, recorded November 4th, 2012. Everyone gets a friendship bracelet. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMyPC from Citrix. GoToMyPC connects you directly to your Office Mac or PC from any other computer and from your iPad and iPhone, too. Sign up for a 30-day free trial today at GoToMyPC.com. Use the promo code TWiT. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile-responsive designs. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT11. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit Audible.com/TWiT2. And to get a copy of Brian Sanderson's Legion absolutely free, visit Audible.com/Sanderson. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers tech news, and what a great panel we have for you. This is kind of, we've been having so much fun the last few weeks putting together kind of specialty panels, and this is the Brooklyn Hipster panel, I think. I'm not sure. There's Baratunde Thurston.
Hoodie vote. Everybody hoodie make vote. Sure to vote on
Everybody
Tuesday.
Vote for your hoodie.
There you go.
It's so good to have you, Baratunde.
It's good to be back.
The paperback version of How to Be Black just out.
Just came out last week. Everybody in the room gets a signed copy.
Really?
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
Well, we should have put them under the chairs.
I'm not Oprah.
So. They would have gone crazy. Also here, he's not from Brooklyn, but Austin is the Brooklyn of Texas.
There you go.
So you got the Brooklyn, and then you got the hipster, so I'm here to represent hipster. Hipsters represents.
Yeah, look at that hair. Brian Brushwood.
Would.
Getting a little too old for the hair, dude.
Man, I'm a little too old for everything. I'm too old for podcasting, sir.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, it's me, Kettle. You're black.
Oh, yeah, podcasting. Yeah, my hobby. So, and also Nick Bilton is here. He actually is a reporter from the New York Times.
A real reporter from a real place.
The Brooklyn New York Times.
The Brooklyn Times. There you go.
Is there? There must be a Brooklyn Times.
There are local papers.
Yeah.
So, first of all, kudos.
And this here is Leo Laporte, ladies and gentlemen.
They know who I am. Kudos to you, Nick, because you've been doing amazing reporting. And
thank
I want to talk
much,
about
Leo.
Your Scott Forstall. You got inside
everywhere.
Everywhere. You
everywhere.
Got great sources.
Like little moles. That
you nanobots. Sorry, he's got
you
nanobots.
You moved out
that's
here from New York to
correct.
Cover Silicon Valley.
Correct.
And I think it didn't take you very long to really get your tentacles into these companies. How did you do that?
Well, I was on the other side of the planet before that, literally and figuratively. I was a developer and a designer, and I built stuff.
So people
actually talk to them about the code, and I'm a terrible programmer, which is why I don't do that anymore. but I used to teach at NYU.
No, but it's credible when we were just talking about Google Plus, and you said there's no right API. That's credible.
Yeah.
And people listen and they go, oh, he knows what he's talking about.
No, and I've taken the tools I've learned from 10 years of building these things and now use them in reporting.
Well, that's great. I mean, your must read now, your Nick's blog, it's part of the Bits blog, right? In the technology section
blog,
on New York Times is must read. Really great stuff.
And you know, the other thing I think is there's a lot of people that play access journalism out here, and I don't do that.
Tell us about that, because I have that's one of the reasons we're in Petaluma, not in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I don't want to have anything to do with these guys? What is access journalism?
Well, so access journalism is where you are nice to a company or a person because you'll get access. So a perfect example is people that are afraid of Apple because they won't get the iPad mini or the new iPhone early to be able to review it, and then they don't get page views and so on. And because we're the New York Times, we don't have to play that game. And the Wall Street Journal doesn't either.
I choose not. Well, but what's funny is Pogue gets it early and Walt Mossberg gets it early anyway.
Yes, exactly.
And both of them, let's face it, are fairly Apple.
But what a lot of bloggers don't realize is that these companies need them more than the bloggers need the companies. And they don't realize that. And if they were to just to say, you know what, I'm just going to write whatever it is
that's
I want to write.
Do. I buy this stuff because I don't get to review it early. But you know what? We're live. It doesn't matter. I'm going to review it day of. I got the mini on Friday. Reviewed it then.
But so that's one of the things that that we definitely do at the Times. So.
He also threatens the companies physically.
Yes, I've broken
Nick is
a couple of kneecaps.
A great boxer, and you will be hurt.
Really? Is that true?
Emotionally, I used to be a fighter. Psychologically,
kind of wiry and
wiry. Yeah, a little.
I got a lot of weight.
Stronger than he looks.
Bar fight weight. Yeah,
he sucker punched people.
Yeah.
So you were in New York during Sandy.
Yeah.
Where you were out here, but you have lots of friends
here,
in New York.
I was covering home. And I was tweeting and I was doing everything I could to make sure I got the word. It was I was actually sad to not be there because I was there on 9/11. I was there during the blackout. Yeah. I was there during Irene. And
but what's different? And I think we say this every time, but I think it really was true. Is that the real news coverage is no longer in mainstream media on this kind of stuff.
Well, it's no longer. Exclusively.
Correct.
I mean, you have to go, it's a parallel
We were just talking
path.
About MSNBC.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you said, what? I don't know, they said, I've got an exclusive.
Yeah, it was a local channel that had made this claim of, we've got this exclusive information, and first, on that bit of information, it was not exclusive.
Of course,
we
I was on Twitter half
Twitter.
An hour earlier.
And in general, it's unlikely that you do.
Right.
Because if you know it, somebody else has probably already shared it on some social stream.
It seems that we say this every time there's a major event that... Because there's people on the ground using Twitter to report. This is first-person
and
reporting.
And you can't – the scale of – I mean, you basically have a distributed journalistic force. They're not all trained, but they're creating – they're sharing images. They're sharing updates. You have real data coming in.
But then there's
and
also –
one reporting
to,
team can't replicate thousands of people showing their direct experience.
But then there's also, is Twitter wrong, the tumblelog, where you have to look and see, oh, okay, there weren't sharks, it turns out.
Was that
an actual report that there were sharks?
Well, yeah, people tweet pictures of they tweet the pictures of the day after tomorrow and say the tidal wave takes Manhattan and then they take pictures. I forget there was one actually. It was like quite funny. It was a shark and a scuba diver under the subway. It's like
some of them are not credible, but obviously, is the day
fake.
After tomorrow. The Statue of Liberty was not being wiped out by a tidal wave.
What's funny is like someone actually took the time to put the New York One logo.
See, I like
that's creative.
That's
commitment to deception.
Commitment to deception.
But this is my question. Yes, Twitter has a lot of information. Here's the shark, which, by the way, it says unverified here, was later found to be fake.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's the information, but half of it's bull.
Well,
crap.
So, I mean, the ratio of false to true is rather low, I think.
Really? You think it's mostly true?
I mean, think about the things that you saw. It was the same 10 images from the day after tomorrow, and you'll see them in the next hurricane.
So it was demonstrably fake, and so who cares?
But at the same time, I think that what happened was that as David Carr, my colleague, says, the internet and Twitter, it's a self-cleaning oven, right? People immediately try to...
Like this site exists.
Yeah, these sites exist.
Right.
What's his name from The Atlantic? Alexis Madrigal set up a site where he was literally live.
That was fantastic.
It was fantastic. Yeah.
In fact, that's
what
where these
doing?
Real and fake stamps on these pictures come from, is Alexis's
And the really smart thing that he was doing was he was going and he was taking the pictures and running them backwards through Google Image Search, and he would say, oh, this is actually a screenshot from this. This is a photo from seven months ago. This is real.
So the tools,
so the self-correction is built in.
It's built in.
Even though that is a risk. Speed works to the advantage of misinformation for a time.
So I wrote about this for my column this week, and I interviewed the author of this book about lying, and he was saying, everyone lies. Politicians lie.
Yeah.
Stores lie. Corporations lie. Everyone lies.
Lie.
And on Twitter they lie. What is different is that... people now can have the lie is actually accountable to at least a username, right? It may not necessarily be a person, but it is a username. And also, there are people that have the ability to correct this quicker than they ever would have had before.
Yeah.
Twitter's efficient role, you call it, in guarding the truth.
Yes.
Actually, you didn't call it that. Some headline.
Some headline.
Nick's been... Because we've been talking a little bit about previous stories where the headline often was kind of sensational.
Even the Times, which is not bad.
Yeah, it's or it's
rewritten in a way to be understandable, but not quite accurate.
Some people write for SEO. Some people write for people to be able to get into the story quicker. Right. You know,
so. No, it's a different job for a headline than it is the reporter, obviously.
Correct.
And people should know that. I think it's not maybe not commonly known, but headline writers, that's a job.
So what was really fascinating to me about the hurricane coverage on Twitter and focusing on that was there was the images that were flowing in from people were just fascinating, right? They were just, I mean, some really breathtaking images. But what Time did was they sent out five real photojournalists that are paid to be photojournalists with their iPhones and Instagram, and they shot images. And those were some of the images that stood out more. And so you have, for me, one of the most beautiful images and haunting images was the picture of the carousel. Did you see that?
Yeah. No. With water rising
with
up.
The water had risen Jane's carousel on the Brooklyn side, which was just taken by someone, just a random, you know, citizen journalist, if you will. And then there were pictures by these photojournalists. And you can see this world where these things are colliding, and but they're all telling the story of what's happening.
But they both have a role, in other words. Absolutely. I mean, we're not eliminating professionals.
Nope. And that's evident by the Time photos standing out. So we're not eliminating those people. But at the same time, people have the ability to be able to share the things that they see from every street, every corner, every basement.
What was fascinating for me is when there's obviously an advantage to professional, you know, journalistic operations, but there's a physical limit to how much you can cover. And so much of the story, Nick and I talked a little bit about this on the ride up, was focused on Manhattan. Because you had a split city. I
think it's also the media capital.
No,
of the world.
Exactly. And it's a business center. But there, you know, the scale of devastation was much larger in Staten Island and Rockaway Park and Rockaway, Far Rockaway and the beach. And being able, you can find those stories online now too. And so someone had started a great discussion on Facebook about why aren't we seeing this coverage? And people just started pouring in
with the
images,
coverage.
With the coverage, with the images. And you see not only in documentation, but in relief efforts. You know, Occupy has done a super organized job down at the edge of Brooklyn where you don't see as much Red Cross activity.
Yeah. So speaking of the coverage, right now we're beyond the initial coverage during the storm phase. And now we're in the interpretation phase and the story of recovery. Like, is anyone else super annoyed that there are so many media publications and so many people making hay tying this single data point with global warming? Is anyone else annoyed by that?
I take it that you're a global warming denier, Brian.
No. I've got no stake in the thing, but it pisses me off. I'm somebody who, as a magician, back in the 70s, there was a guy named Uri Geller who claimed to have psychic powers and could bend spoons with his minds. And one of the tricks he would do, after bending a spoon in front of everything, he would say, now all of you, go out and look for watches that were stopped that have started happening now. My psychic powers have caused this to happen. And everyone would go out and they'd find these little knickknacks. They're like, oh, this old watch wasn't working. Now it's working. It must have been your psychic powers. And the phone lines would light up for it. It's a magic trick to
how did
tape
he bend
statistic
the spoons?
Noise with his mind, of course, right?
No, I understand that, Brian. You're saying correlation does not equal causation.
But it also goes both ways. It annoys me when Fox News starts saying, coldest day in 8 years. Where's your global warming now? And when either side validates it, they're part of the problem because it's unscientific and it only gives validity to the other side. I just want all of those assholes to stop it.
Well, I read a piece in some science journal this week that basically said, can we say that this storm is a result of global warming?
Of course
not.
Obviously not.
But can we over time, the fact that we're seeing more of these storms, these combination effects, the scale, the breadth, the impact, the economic loss is growing. Yes, that is the trend as a result of a changing climate.
You can also say that a warmer Atlantic, which is demonstrably the case, does increase the strength of Sandy.
So any specific storm, scientifically, you can't say, that's a global warming storm. And that's not. But the fact that these are stronger over time and in general.
More importantly, but that's just it, is the only way to analyze a statistical trend is to look at the statistical trend. Anytime you point to a single data point and interpret it with that lens, you do harm to the public understanding of science.
But people don't experience trends, right? They experience single data points. They experience a loss.
There's plenty
today.
Of political hay to be made for it. And sure, never let a good disaster go to waste. But that's the problem. That's why we have a scientifically illiterate public, is because we can't resist on both sides taking advantage of a tragedy on one side or the other to essentially idiotify everybody at home.
But understand,
I think it's a real problem.
Let's say there were global warming and it were the issue may be not global warming, but whether what's the cause. But let's say there were just bear with me for this. So let's say there were global warming. What you would have is a series of increasingly strong climactic results that you couldn't individually point to global warming. But at some point, you have to say, well, something's going on. Right. And so I read a great speech, and I'm trying to find it. I can't find it. About if you were going to pick the hardest thing you could pick to demonstrate, mm-hmm. it would be something that takes thousands of years. Right. It's very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's also if there is global warming and the planet is dying, we kind of need to know that. You know what I'm saying? And we kind of have to act upon it.
No,
absolutely.
It's appropriate to start looking for evidence, not stopped clocks. I understand why the issue of stopped clocks is germane, but...
Well, and understand, okay, here's my rule, right? This is the Brian Brushwood rule. You are allowed to make political hay on a specific data point for a specific storm. You're able to blow it up, but that means you can't complain when the Republicans make hay over a big snowstorm or it being a particularly cold year. You're either going to play the game.
Yeah, but that's just brain dead because
dude,
that's just saying
work. That rule, yeah, that doesn't, that rule doesn't support well,
it's like
the
you
scientific
can't have both
fact
ways.
Of the
you
trend.
I think that this is fascinating stuff, but shouldn't we be talking about the iPad mini?
If only we can show hurricane photos.
Speaking
on the
of global warming. All right, we're going to take a break and come back with more. Brian Brushwood is here. Representing the libertarian south of the United States of America.
Brooklyn of Texas.
The Brooklyn of Texas. Actually, you shouldn't be, you should be in Dallas, not Austin. What are you doing?
Oh, my God. Dallas is a bunch of frat douchebags. Forget about those guys.
And there goes half your followers. Way to go, Schwood. Way to go.
Well, wait a minute. This guy doesn't know how to play the game. Maybe Fort Worth. Isn't that where the West begins?
I think no. I do know. I found out this recently that El Paso is closer to California than it is to Dallas. That's how big
what?
Texas is.
That is
they have that on a billboard as you drive into
can
Dallas.
Can we just give a shout out to a friend real quick?
Yeah, of course.
Ashley Granada is watching.
Hey, what's up, Ashley?
Say hi to Ashley. She's a good peeps.
Good.
Leo doesn't play the
Masketeer. Was she that one that was a Masketeer that she's...
I went to Burning Man with Ashley. I'm trying to put live.twit on Google Plus, but it just doesn't seem to want to go.
They try to block us.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
They don't like you?
No, I don't know why that is. I don't want to start a bad rumor.
All right. Let's...
Also here, Mr. Baratunde de Thurston.
Yep. Escape from New York was successful.
You're on a tour? Are you on a book tour?
I'm on a constant tour. It's the permanent campaign.
You don't even have a home anymore.
I'm promoting the book some. I've been hustling for Obama heavily around the place online and off. And we're going down to Tuesday. And I've been hopping around the world as I generally do.
So what is the feeling in the Obama campaign? You think it's going to be close? Do they want?
Well, I mean, it's obviously close. I think that's the definite case. It comes, you know, polls are meaningless this close to the event.
Yeah.
And it's about turnout.
Yeah.
So, you know, arguments are done.
So we have to give Baratunde some major props here. Baratunde is staying with me for a couple of days, but he's not going to be staying with me on Monday night because he's taking a red eye back to New York to vote and then flying back right afterwards.
Because the storms, to bring it back to Sandy, threw off my absentee.
They're actually letting people in New Jersey fax and email
that. I saw that the governor tweeted it.
Isn't that awesome?
The one time you wanted to live in New Jersey.
I did. I said it on tour. I was like, I never thought I'd say this, but I wished I lived in New Jersey today.
I've already voted.
I tried to already vote
in
the mail. The mail got
so much easier.
Washed away.
Where are you?
Oh, that's
where
terrible.
Do you, where do you?
Here, right here in beautiful California.
In Petaluma?
Petaluma, California.
There you go.
Yeah.
How long have you been in Petaluma for?
Almost 20 years.
Wow.
Like it here. Nice. But, you know, for me, that getting back to that access journalism, mm-hmm. it was really important for
There's
me to get
out of
There's
not access journalism in Petaluma.
No, get out of the bubble. Yeah. Not go to the parties, mm-hmm. not hang out with the PR people, not hang out with the company. Because it's hard to say something bad about somebody you like and know.
No, it's difficult. It is. Absolutely.
Yeah. Nick Bilton's also here, the journalist. He's doing such great work at the New York Times. We're going to talk more about the mini. You got a mini with you.
Yeah,
we'll talk about the
me.
Mini. I'd like to hear your opinion about that.
I'm digging the mini.
You could talk about it, too, if you want.
Sure, I will talk about everything.
All right.
Yep.
But first, a word from our friends at Citrix. They do that great remote access program I recommend, and I'm going to be using in Australia. Let me tell you, when you run your own business, the idea of taking a vacation... It's you don't even think of it because what's going to happen when I'm gone? So I needed to get out of town. I'm actually a little afraid and go to my PC is going to mean that I can at least get back to the office computer. I can check the email, send email from my office account. I can, if I, you know, I'm doing presentations on the trip, and I will inevitably leave some data behind on the computer. I can get it even on my iPad or my iPhone, or I tried it on the Mini. It works great on the Mini. I want you to try it yourself right now, free for 30 days. Visit gotomypc.com. It's completely secure, 128-bit SSL. It's the fastest one out there. You can use any web browser to access your computer at work. Try it free. Just use the offer code TWIT for 30 days free. And then the apps for the iPhone, the iPad, the Android tablets, they're free as well. Go to mypc.com. We thank the folks at Citrix.
Do it now. Why haven't you done it yet?
Why haven't you done it?
You're sitting there listening and you're not doing it.
I'll tell you why. I know why. Because they're waiting. Because they got that 30-day trial and they're going to wait till vacation. You know, Thanksgiving's coming. You'd like to go home. Maybe you can go home on Wednesday, right? Instead of waiting until Thursday, that kind of thing.
And you could probably chime in via that iPad Mini of yours.
There you go.
Ho-ho.
Speaking of the Mini, it's here. Came on Friday. Apparently sold out already.
Sold out already, yes. But apparently you could get one in Stockton. Do you know where is Stockton?
Not far from here. Let's go. Road trip.
O'Malik had to go and get one in Stockton. He was having such a hard time. Yeah,
he wanted one that bad.
He was like, I think I'm going to wait. And I was like, you're not going to wait. Just get it. And he's like, okay, I'm going to get it.
But all you need now is the Wi-Fi, black or white.
Black or white, yep. Or you can spray paint it.
You got the black
there's no 3G.
With a
there's
white.
There's 3G, but that comes at the end of the month. So I have the black one here.
With a white cover.
Just couldn't
the white
wait. Cover.
So I have to say, I've never believed that the iPad was a mobile device. It's too heavy. It's too big.
Yeah.
It's like it's a second laptop. It just doesn't have a keyboard.
That's because you're a welterweight.
Because he has a MacBook Air 11-inch.
Bar fighting.
As do we all.
But
really?
This is like the first.
We have the same
311.
Oh, I thought you were talking about something else.
I was talking about the thing I just said. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Get this
I
man
got my
another
hopes
drink.
Up briefly. Yeah.
So,
I thought just hanging out with you would help, but I guess not.
Continue, Jarvis.
Yeah, I'm going to continue on the 7.9 inch device. Yeah. Yeah.
Much more realistically sized.
Yeah, much more realistically. Or for you, there's the iPhone.
It's 5 inches now.
It's smart.
Four?
Yeah,
it's
four.
Really?
Yeah, it was 3.9.
I always liked to, you know, that optical inch, the extra optical inch. But anyway, that's another matter.
Depends on the weather.
So I really like this thing. I mean, sure, it doesn't have the Retina display, and I feel like that was kind of a cheap shot because they could have easily put it in.
Because they clearly put it in the phone. Why would you de-retinize?
The phone and the iPad. The Touch.
Yeah.
But it's, well, what do you think of yours?
Is they wanted to compete on price, right? With the against the
yeah, but
the
that's,
Nexus
that's
7,
a mistake.
Right? I think that's a mistake.
Apple never wants to compete on price, do they?
Really? It's interesting. Nick and I both independently came to the same conclusion, which was that Apple has deferred. You wrote an article about this.
So it's planned obsolescence.
They deferred an 8-megapixel camera and a Retina display in this thing. They could have easily included it because they want to do it. They want something for next
They're
year.
They're going to do it 6 months from now.
Right. Exactly. And so what it is, it's planned obsolescence. So planned obsolescence was developed in the 1940s or 50s with cars.
IBM used to do it. They would hold back innovation, stagger step them out in the 50s with mainframe computers because they wanted to sell new models. Cars, same thing. Fins.
Cars, the catalogs. It was the fins. So they did larger fins and smaller fins.
So what's the timing on when this gets a real display?
I think it's going to be September. It'll be in the fall from
a year.
But
here's they'll sell 10 million or whatever it is, but it's just
my general take was Apple should not have I think you're right, Brian. I think that they were somewhat aware of the low end, but look what happened. Google came out and said, okay, we'll take $50 off the Nexus 7. The problem is you cannot compete at the low end because neither Google nor Amazon has the same business model as Apple.
Correct.
Google makes money when you use it. Amazon makes money when you use it. Apple makes money when you buy it.
So when I covered the release of the Kindle HD and I spoke to Bezos.
That's what he said.
And he said, I don't care if you have the first Kindle in your drawer or this Kindle. He's like, we just care if you buy books and if you buy media from us. Whereas for Apple, it's if they care if you have the newest
it's
device.
It's the hardware. It's the margin
they
on
make
the hardware.
Some, they probably make some so money on the ecosystem after the fact, but mostly it's on
here's the question for the crew. What's more important in the long run? Is it going – because I'm kind of fed up buying new Apple devices. Yeah.
Starting to happen is there's going to be some fatigue. I think the 5 is the beginning of that. This thing maybe as well.
So in the long run, is Amazon have a better business model because they're based on the media, not the device?
Not, in my opinion, the Amazon Kindle Fire HD, which I've used extensively, is not very good.
Okay. I agree. It's a bad UI.
It's a bad UI.
Yeah.
The Nexus 7, on the other hand, is extremely competitive. It's $200 for 16 gigabytes. It's got a higher res screen. The only thing lacking, it doesn't have a rear-facing camera. I think most people don't care about that.
Yep.
And so my recommendation was not to buy the Mini. If price is an issue, get the Nexus 7.
The Nexus 7 is a wonderful, wonderful device.
And I think Apple should have, and I think you and I both before the show agreed to this, not have said we're going to make a competitive low-price product. We're going to make a small iPad, and we're going to charge whatever we need to charge to make it a Retina
display. Like an iPad Mini.
Like an iPad Mini.
Mega Mini.
Now, do you think that they would have been better off if they had offered, because the press event was obviously, it was a heavy focus on the iPad Mini and then a minor focus on the latest revision of the iPad. I almost feel like the fact that they tried to pull this, as they're very good at in general, this breathless new innovation, something you've always wanted for essentially what's a mushy middle product. It's something that pretty much just bridges the gap between your cell phone and an iPad. I think they would have been better off if they played it down as an afterthought, you know, focus more on the new iPad revisions and then say, BT Dubs, people seem to like smaller devices, so we made one of those for you too, if you're interested. Then they could have charged $100 more and nobody would have complained.
Mm. That's not Apple's way, though.
Somebody just said on the thread they feel bad for Apple. It's $650 billion.
A good idea.
I mean, they have $121 billion in cash
in the bank. Sympathies are misplaced.
They could buy Greece. What's to feel bad for?
That's the answer to your question. You were asking whether or not Amazon had the better business model. Clearly not. Otherwise, they would be an Apple's
place. Yeah, but I remember for years.
He said in the long run as well.
In the long run. Because I remember for years we said, whose wallet would you rather have, Steve Jobs or Bill Gates? Right. Bill Gates had a model where Microsoft paid very little for, you know, software's free. They don't have to, and they charged a lot of money. But as time went by, Apple's business model actually turned out to be the better business model.
And I think part of the choice is, is there a declining marginal return on the awesomeness of the hardware beyond which you're just not impressed anymore?
Well, that's what's happening.
And then who has?
What is the thing, the thread between all these devices? They're rectangles.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen is they're just going to get thinner and thinner and thinner, and that's it.
So when do we stop caring about the specs? And then on the second term...
Well, we already do.
Okay. If it's a service issue, who's got the better ecosystem? Am I locked in?
Well, that's
in
what it comes down to, is the three
to
screens.
iTunes, to my account, to the wallet they have, to the investment I've already made in my TV subscriptions there, or am I tied into Amazon because of my book relationship with them and my shipping relationship, my Amazon Prime? Or is it to Google with their burgeoning thing?
Okay, so that's really interesting because I am tied into Amazon with my books because it works on any device.
Same.
Apple, I don't buy books from because it works on Apple devices.
But I do buy most of my TV through Apple.
Yes, but that's because it's a one-time thing, right? I watch it once. You don't save your TV shows and watch them later.
No, that's true. But yeah, books are Kindle.
So things that you want for an extended period of time, you're going to go with the brand that allows you to do that. Things that you want immediately, you'll go with that.
And music, I go with neither.
I do predict, though,
services,
that we're going to hear record sales numbers for the iPad Mini.
Of course. Absolutely.
So what are we saying? We're not saying that it's not going to be a success.
What we're saying is, what I believe is, I bought this cable here. Right,
and that's driving me crazy.
This is a fire
lightning
cable to USB. $29 effing dollars. Okay, seriously, screw you guys, because this thing costs 50 cents to make. Because you know what? Every single one of these cables that comes out, there's a third party that makes them, and they cost
$0.50. These have authentication chips, and so they are more expensive.
Okay, 56 cents.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. I mean, at
that's
scale,
a huge difference. That's like more than 10% difference.
But as a customer,
go ahead.
As a customer, it's annoying. It's like completely frustrating and disrespectful.
And because Apple did have to move everybody from that 30-pin connector, they should have really charged cost for these, at least to make up for the fact that you're going to have some pain. You're going to have to buy a bunch.
Exactly.
And I've spent $200 on Lightning cables.
I have too.
It's really frustrating.
And it's really frustrating. And I think that it's not fair to the customer. I really truly believe it's not.
But it's not hurting Apple's bottom line.
I know.
Fairness of the customer is ultimately measured in sales.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's a long term and the short term. In the short term, of course, they're making money hand over fist, but they're eroding their long term brand value.
Yeah,
this is the cashing in. This is what you see. This is
I gotta say they've been doing this historically. Remember how much Apple charged for RAM? They stopped doing that, but they used to charge five times what RAM cost when you bought a Mac with more RAM.
Yeah. What's your
And it didn't hurt them, did it, Brian?
Well, I mean, again, it's tough to say right now. I mean, it's in a post-Jobs era, it's very difficult to know whether or not any of these things are chipping away to what extent. But, you know, in many ways, brands tend to get to the top of their game and then they begin to cannibalize themselves because they can't resist taking advantage of all the power they have, not realizing that for all the money they get, they are chipping away at their value.
Absolutely.
Well, and you saw that, you know, so you see with the cables. You saw with Maps, which was a forced downgrade to many of its users, would you have been led to expect a certain service level, and then they violated that trust and that expectation. So.
Yeah,
so
in fact, I talked to somebody on an iPhone 4 on the radio show today, and she, as you would normally do, installed iOS 6 because Apple said you should install the new update.
Why would you not?
And all of a sudden, it took away features.
Yeah, your upgrades don't decline.
She was very upset. It shouldn't reduce the value. Quite reasonably so. Yeah.
Should we talk about the big changes at Apple now, too?
You got a great scoop on Scott Forstall. Let's talk about that in a second.
Always shuffling.
You led the story, and I think Om Malik went out and asked his people, and they confirmed for the most part, except for one exception, what you found out.
Which was?
Well, I'm going to talk about that in just a second, but first a word from Squarespace.
Teaser.
You know what Anthony Castellaneta did at Squarespace? What? Pier 1, which was their network operations center. Of course, there's no power, right? Yeah, they're in the Lower East Side. Their generator's in the basement. Basement's flooded. They have one generator on the 17th floor. Anthony Castellaneta, the founder and CEO of Squarespace, and a bunch of other people from, I think, another customer at Pier 1, hand-carried diesel fuel up 17 floors to keep that generator running.
My site is up, so thank you.
Your site's on Squarespace?
I'm on Squarespace, yeah. Baratunde.com.
That's a commitment to keep your cheesy little blog up. This guy stayed up all night carrying...
Okay, first of all, there's no cheese on my blog. There's nothing but value.
I love it.
So just keep that in mind.
And by the way, a lot of other big sites...
Yeah, absolutely.
Including all of Gawker down.
Oh, no, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a serious storm, and it just shows
they're on Tumblr now. They're sponsored by State Farm.
That was pretty smart.
Far Creek Software. That's right. Joel Spolsky's site.
I got to give Nick Denton props for that.
Who's monetizing these
all the Gawker backup sites are sponsored by State Farm Insurance. That was the advertiser they got.
Yeah, with their phone number to call in for your claims.
It was pretty
smart.
That's
clever.
Yeah, very clever.
I wonder if State Farm knows what they're sponsoring.
Oh, no, they do. It's a special deal.
The Gawker media brand is one of the biggest online. I mean,
yeah, no, they knew what they were.
Jezebel, Gawker, Gizmodo. Gizmodo was one of the first tech sites.
Yeah, Gizmodo's big.
So Squarespace.
Oh, yeah. What was I saying?
You were about to sell some product.
Anyway, that's what I call commitment. Squarespace is hosting, the best hosting that really cares about keeping your site up and running. But it's also the best software. And I really think that that's a key to what Squarespace has done. They've got this new Squarespace 6, which is modernizing the Squarespace stuff so that it uses adaptive design. They call it responsive design. So that when you visit it, no matter what, this makes sense. We used to have a mobile site and a desktop site.
What about a WAP site? Remember the WAP site?
Remember that? This was all for mobile, right?
Those were the days.
And it was crazy to have two different sites. I still have two different sites on one of my blogs. Squarespace, like any modern company, which is a real handful in the business, said, wait a minute, what if we just had one site that sizes itself intelligently to the platform? And so when you get a Squarespace site, it looks great on anything from an iPhone, even like one of these mini iPhones, to the to a 27-inch Dell XPS. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And it all is done automatically. You don't have to think about it. For instance, when you upload an image, it automatically sizes that image. I think seven different versions of it for every possible. So here's what you do. Go to squarespace.com and just take a test drive. It costs you nothing, no credit card needed. You're going to start by picking your template. If you're a photographer, you'll notice some really gorgeous portfolio templates. I shouldn't say photographer, artist, designer, anybody who wants a portfolio. This is a really great place for that. And then... once you get your site, you can import all your data.
Do they want people like photographers to be featured on there, or what?
Yeah, they have a push of like artists and designers because their portfolio management is kind of beautiful.
And you know why is that people go, a lot of photographers unfortunately go to like these specialized companies that do photography, and they're terrible. They don't keep up with technology. They're not responsive. There's all this stuff that
you guys remember Flickr.
heard about that.
Whatever happened to them?
I don't know. Apparently,
I want to ask you what Marissa's up to too.
Okay,
you probably have insight.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know Kara Swisher gets every memo.
Well, Kara works for Yahoo.
She must.
She works for Yahoo. So,
she must.
She runs a little blog on the side. But, you know, big deal.
There's something she's got going on. Anyway,
but I have theories on. I have a suggestion for Marissa on Flickr.
I'd love to hear it.
After
I'd love to hear it. Meanwhile, if you are a photographer, probably you're not using Flickr for your portfolio.
No, I use my personal site now.
Yeah. Well, this is a great place to
do it. I'm going
to
look into
surfing.
This.
Nice.
And, okay, Nick, I don't know what you're paying for your site or what you're paying for that specialized photography site, but okay, after you do the 14-day trial, if you decide to buy, look at this. There's two plans. It's very simple. $8 for the standard plan. This is when you pay for a year. So $8 a month for a year.
Mm-hmm.
$16 for unlimited. This is what you want. Unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs, unlimited bandwidth. I don't know of any other hosting company
it's
that
truly
does that.
Unlimited.
I mean, that's crazy talk.
It's the no limit plan.
Unlimited storage. Now, that does. Now this is important. Files are limited to 20 megs in size.
Ah, so it's not unlimited. Found the
You can have as many 20 megs as you want. But you can't.
But a single file.
But you can't,
yes.
You can't put
Take
like
that.
A 5 gigabyte file up there and say everybody download and unlimited contributors.
I'm going to the FTC and complaining.
No, unlimited. They put. They says right here.
No, at least they don't bury
and I think
in
that's
small
fair. I think that's really fair. Anyway, this is a great deal. Yeah. You also get MailChimp Sync, Google Apps Sync, Facebook Pages, Publishing, Form Builder. Great support. And when you buy a year plan, you'll get the domain name free and they'll hook it all up for you. Import your content from all of the existing sites.
Except I had a big hiccup. And I've talked to them.
From my
Squarespace 5 to my Squarespace 6.
And that's because of the responsive design. You can't. You have to redesign.
It just didn't pull in the actual data.
They fixed that, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
They said they had fixed a dozen customers. You have to redo the design.
I was one of the rare people that got caught up in that.
But they gave you good service, I hope?
Yeah, no, they've been very responsive.
Are you happier on the Squarespace 6? Because I was thinking about jumping over.
Well, my personal one still isn't. I made a new site on 6 as a part of the project.
That's the issue. That's probably what you should do. I should tell you,
so
if you have an old Squarespace site, you should probably create a new site for 6 and migrate it over to that. Because, in fact, you have to.
Yeah.
And that's just because of the technology. They'll do it. Wait a minute. They're not offering to do it for you?
That has not happened.
Squarespace, would you take care of my... Seriously.
That's the power of the
Would
Laporte
you just take
thumb.
Care of my friend here?
He literally just stuck his
thumb. You'll get an email before the show's over. I can't believe that. No. We're gonna take care of you. Squarespace. I'll do that for anybody. Squarespace.com.
It pays to be in the studio.
Oh. I forgot to mention this. When you buy, Nick, you should do this. Use TWIT11 as the offer code. Save 10% off the first purchase.
Okay, done.
TWIT11. That's for the month 11, right? October.
Wait, 10%. That means if I made an order of $10 billion, I'd save like...
$1 billion.
Wow, that's amazing.
So buy more, you'll save more. I don't think there's any way that you could actually make a billion-dollar order for Squarespace. But try, because you'll
make
save a billion.
I want to buy all the sites. Just like all the sites.
Should we start a Kickstarter?
Let's do it.
All right.
$1 billion. I want to save $1 billion, please.
What do we got?
So you had some great reporting on Scott Forstall.
Yeah, my colleague and I, Nick Wingfield, who is the Apple Beat reporter at the New York Times.
So you just wrote it. He got all the scoops.
No, we work together. We're a team.
Just teasing
we're teamwork.
I'm just teasing you.
That's what's great.
He does. I'm not going to tease him anymore.
Yeah. Man, Leo's feisty today. He's taking on Nick Bilton. He tells me I'm too old for my hairstyle. He's...
I'm on vacation, baby!
Soon he's going to tell Bartunde he's really white.
There you go. I'm waiting for the comments. Be great. Well, let's go, Nick, back to
how to be black but earn like a white man.
I knew it. There's always a moment.
This egged me on.
But you allowed yourself to be egged.
Should we go?
You wanted to be egged.
I think we should leave.
He's hugging me for those listening at home, and then he kissed me. Felt good.
All right, let's move to skeuomorphism.
Skeuomorphic design.
Skeuomorphic design. So Scott Forstall.
I hope you're right that Scott Forstall was the single sole advocate after the death of Steve Jobs for this crappy leather stitching. It's horrible.
He was the, shall I tell this like a news reporter?
Yes.
This week, Scott Forstall. Of Apple was kicked out by Johnny Ive and
was it Johnny Ive? You think
no? So Johnny.
So some
and
of
Scott,
your reporting said they wouldn't even go to a meeting together.
So let's. You want to go behind the scenes?
Let's do it.
Go inside out.
Dish, baby.
So exciting.
So
I love reporting.
Scott and Johnny not big fans of each other, and according to people close to the matter who could not be named because they're not allowed to speak publicly by the company, so we have to say in the New York Times. There were times that there were meetings about the same thing where Scott would meet with these people and his team, and then Scott and his team would leave, and Johnny would come in with his team and leave. And,
were they getting conflicting messages from the two different teams?
Well, these are some of the – I mean, of course, they get conflicting messages from Apple, period, because right. it's a difficult company to work with. But the, you know, the reality is Scott – So Steve was a huge fan of Skew Murphy Design, right?
I think it started with Steve.
Oh, without a doubt.
And I think Scott was Steve's guy, because yeah. Scott gentlemen, came over gentlemen. With him from Next.
Yes. I would just like for the audience for you to define Skew Murphy Design.
Skew Murphy Design is essentially, and the nerds are going to pick on me because I'm probably going to, like,
the nerds always pick on you. So.
There'll be a period I put in the wrong place.
The nerds love it when you refer to them as the nerds. The nerds. It's always a great way to ingratiate yourself.
You mean our chat room?
When nerds attack. So Skew Murphy Design is essentially, like, an example is Steve Jobs loved the leather stitching and the leather on his private jet, and he wanted it in part of the Apple OS. So okay. They put it in the calendar, I believe.
Or binder
whatever it was. So you see the leather stitching. Another example is there's some pretty bad examples, but there's like radio where you have the radio dial, right. Or you have buttons that are turnable. So Skew Murphy Design can kind of blend between the actual user interface and the design.
The idea was originally. So Dribbble has got some great examples, by the way. Dribble. And these are real for the most part.
Some great stuff in there. And they're just terrible. I mean, most of them are terrible. And the idea was that, and it actually was smart in the early days because people didn't know what computers
were.
It made
people comfortable.
And so you see this dial, this button that you press, and it makes sense. And you're like, oh, I feel good. I feel calm. Okay. Yeah. But now, so if you look at the last few versions of the iTunes logo, for example, it always was a CD. Right, but now go and find like a 12-year-old and ask them if they know what a CD is, right. And they're going to be like, "I don't. What is that? Why is that round thing on that logo?
Why are you pegging your design to a time limit?"
No, this is not even a joke. We had an 8-year-old's birthday party that we were attending, and we had to explain to the girl they're doing some kind of hot potato thing, and we had to explain that you couldn't tilt the thing while the disc was spinning inside because there was a physical object in there spinning around
totally
in circles
it.
While you're playing the game.
I love the way spinning you just described the scene. Why is it spinning?
Why is it spinning?
There's no reason for that.
So Jobs was a big fan of it, and I think it worked for a long time. But eventually, you have to kill the thing that is great, right? You have to cannibalize yourself. And I think Johnny, if you look at this design of this beautiful machine and this beautiful, I mean, when he sits up there in his British accent, and he goes, "It's the most beautiful iPhone we've ever made." He's not kidding. Like these are the designs of these things, and he's always focused on these things. And apparently, and I don't know if we actually put this in our story, but I'm going to break some news here.
Exclusive.
So exclusive on Twit. So apparently Johnny is a big fan of – I mean, he thinks that the Windows Phone 8 design is actually quite nice, right? And I think it is. I agree.
It is what we call digital native.
Yeah.
It no longer refers back to
Why
any
lock
pre-non-digital
–
And Scott
stuff.
Apparently thought it was crap. Oh. And so there was that, and then there was a lot of the stuff that happened with Apple Maps, and apparently there was a big meeting with the execs, and they wanted to put out an apology, and Tim Cook asked Scott to sign it, and Scott refused, which is what we reported. Mm. And Scott also just didn't play well with others.
Now, old Malik said, I couldn't get any of my sources to confirm that this was the issue, but...
Which part?
The part about signing the letter.
I think that was one of them, but there's been a lot of tension.
It makes sense, though. You're the CEO. You want this apology. You're going to do this apology. And when you're forced to sign it yourself because the guy responsible for iOS said, "No, I am not signing it. I am not." Here's an example. This is a photo booth in Snow Leopard, which is fairly clean and simple. Here's photo booth in Lion.
Oh, it's got
red velvet curtains.
Exactly.
It's got a
that
wooden
always irritates me. And Game
frame.
Center.
So what's
is the
Game
worst.
Center's Game got Center is awful.
Green bays.
It makes me not want to have fun.
Game Center looks like
Game
Zynga
Center
designed
to have
it.
Fun.
It's totally
and then it unfunds me.
In Scott's defense, Scott single-handedly, was one of the people that put iOS where it is today. There are hundreds of millions of people on iOS. I mean, 100 million devices.
People point to Siri and Maps as a debacle, but everything else has been hugely successful.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what happened when Steve was running the company, you can ask Walter Isaacson, Adam Leshinsky, all these guys that have written books on this. When Steve was running the company, he enjoyed and he liked and he promoted the tension within the company.
He wanted that.
He wanted that because it created a creative force. And I think it worked.
Like
when
Lincoln.
You have people that are like, "Skewmorphic's amazing," and people are like, it sucks.
It works when you have a dictator
correct.
Who can say, you're right, we're going to do it this way.
Right.
But if there's nobody with that strong leading it, it's very
So when Steve left, there was a giant power vacuum at Apple.
And to which I stepped.
It's me. Love to see you.
It's me, everybody. I'm actually the guy behind
what,
the curtain.
One of the stories was that Scott was very preening and grooming himself to be the next CEO. Nobody else thought this, but he thought he should be the
he
next
thought,
CEO.
And I've heard this from several sources, very senior people too, and other people have reported it, you know, he believed that he should have been CEO, not Tim.
So there's a problem right there.
And I think there's a problem right there. And I think that, you know, and the thing with Scott, the thing with Scott was, I mean,
in the game of Apple, you become CEO or you die.
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably true.
That's good. Oh, I love Schwood.
But what, I mean, Schwood. When I interviewed Walter Isaacson, I did a Q&A with him after the book came out. And one of the things that he said that really stuck out with me was, Steve Jobs was, there was half of him that was this creative genius, and there was half of him that was this technical genius, if you will, right? And there was also problems. He's not the greatest guy ever, but that was the gist of it. And when you take Tim Cook and Johnny Ive and you put those two together, they are that. So Johnny is the creative genius, Tim is the business genius, and they together make what essentially Apple was with Steve Jobs. Right.
Well, and that's what you have now, because Johnny Ive, this is the first time at Apple that I can remember somebody being in charge of everything. He's in charge of human interface design across all products.
Which makes sense.
Oh, yeah, I think actually. So, too. Makes sense. Yeah. And I think that you'll start to see a much more beautiful and consistent user interface that spans every single part of the OS.
Eddie Q, was the iTunes guy, is now responsible for software across the board. Now, do you think Scott needed to go? I mean, what is your sense of it? There were reports, I think it was in your story, in fact, that people were celebrating. They were going to the bars and saying, ding dong, the witch is dead, when he was fired.
Yeah, there was somebody that said it's better than the Giants winning, that was a source.
which is saying a lot,
yeah. You know, coming from someone in California.
There's one thing that really surprised me in the media coverage of this is people were saying, you know, Maps was amiss, but then they listed Siri as a black eye, and I've never thought of Siri. I'm somebody who's on the road, always behind the wheel or riding my bike. I use Siri nonstop, and I find it, in general, really good. And I was surprised that we didn't hear more Siri talk at the last
I'll tell you why Siri is a failure. First of all, they bought a program, Siri, that did more than Siri does even today. It never got out of beta. The network has been highly unreliable. So I don't know about you, Ryan, but don't you find that at least some large percent of the time you try to communicate with Siri, she comes back saying, I'm sorry, I can't help you.
And
right
it's
now.
Not just a 3G thing. It's Wi-Fi, too.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's
Siri's network, not us.
Yeah. When it happens, it almost exclusively is because of connectivity issues, not because she misinterprets what I'm saying.
No, it's not. And I think that that's a common misconception, that you're having connectivity issues. It's North Carolina. It's their data center is not responsive. And I know that because it happens here when we have
very good
connectivity.
You don't think it's a matter of the consumer product not being appreciated. You think it's a case where the infrastructure is not strong enough, and that's why they're not continuing to build on it?
I believe that's part of the problem. You know, I don't know. Maybe Nick knows better what the thinking is inside Apple. But Siri should be out of beta by now. Siri should be better than it is by now. It's just now
Siri,
being as good as it was when they acquired it.
You should be able to download personality. You should be able to download different personalities.
I want mine to be the Knight Rider car. I would pay for that.
If you look at go back to All Things D when they demoed Siri before it was purchased as Siri, before it was purchased by Apple, and there was these great things where you could say, you know, what are the five biggest lakes in California? You know, what's the temperature in South Dakota compared to the temperature in North Carolina?
They stripped all these things out.
And I think that, you know, if they're going to do it in beta, do it in beta. Like, throw everything in there and let us, like, have fun and play with it.
Yeah.
Or strip it out and say it's not in beta or whatever it is that you need to do.
I would guess, Brian, that your good experience with Siri is because you have limited severely what you try to do with it.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what Siri's going to do well and what she's not going to do well.
Right. And I guess part of that, you know, it's very compartmentalized. You could do the parlor trick of asking, you know, what's the mass of Jupiter? And it calls up, you know, the stuff from Wolfram Alpha. Right. But for sending texts, I very rarely have her dictate texts to me. But when I'm out on my bike, I mean, there's nothing I got hands on the handles. I'm not able to do anything. And it's a big pain in the butt to pull out the phone. So I use it a lot for that. And there are times I send out texts. I'm like, it's close enough. Sure.
Actually,
whatever.
I do that all the time. And sometimes some wonderful art.
Sending death threats by accident.
Yeah. But that's different. That's nuance. That's the nuance dictation. That's actually something different. And it's not something Apple developed.
My failure has been, Like, there's a certain level of, there's a certain service level that I expect. And when it fails, then my trust in the system is degraded. So I just, it becomes binary for me. If it doesn't work 98%+ of the time, it works 0% of the time.
Exactly.
And so what I will dictate a query or a transcription, and it pings the server and gives me little beautiful purple dots, and then comes back with zero. And I've just dictated a whole paragraph, and it's gone.
I'm getting really sick of those thoughts.
It's like I never did anything. Yeah. It's like I just did work. It's your turn. Like, it's a partnership.
Anyway, I think it's reasonable to say it isn't widely acknowledged as Siri is a flop, and the fact that
just not nearly as
the
great
fact
as
that everybody's saying Scott Forstall's flops, Maps and Siri. Mm. I understand what you're saying, Brian. It's like, well, really, was Siri such a flop?
Well, I'll tell you what, man, it's something that I've wanted. I mean, if you go back to listening to one of my first appearances on This Week in Tech, it was like all I wanted was that microphone button on the keyboard so that I could start voice dictation. And it took years for it to get there. And now that it's here, I'm thrilled. But
I would say he was not fired over Maps and Siri.
No, I think
convenient,
it was
convenient, but that's not what.
Yeah, I think it was just it was everything. It was like, and I think that there was really a power vacuum going on in Apple, and there still will be, and there still is. You know,
we've seen this before. Remember, Google did a reorganization, and somebody was left out of that. A woman named Marissa Meyer.
Yeah, exactly. She was pushed down very far.
Yeah, it's not unusual, especially with a new CEO, in this case Larry Page, in this case Tim Cook, to come in and put a stamp on a company, say, these are the people I trust, this is how I'm going to, and the organization is going to be a little bit different because I'm not Steve Jobs.
Correct. And Apple, of course, wants to make sure that people know that it is run by Tim Cook.
That's really the bottom line.
That makes sense.
That's the, yeah.
You gotta, he's got to sacrifice some. This is what every new king has to come in and establish dominance.
Well, there's another.
And sacrificing, you know, a high-ranking member of the family to make,
man,
to make it clear.
Now you're blowing Tyrion Lannister on us.
That's the buck stops.
Like, exactly. Sorry, bro, some heads got to roll.
You got to always pay your debts.
All right,
you
so,
gotta kill
so let's do a little foreshadowing here. So Scott Forstall, you know, he ran a very large part of an organization at one of the biggest companies in the world.
Oh, he works for me now.
Where is, after he works for Bartender, where does he go now? What is next for Scott Forstall? Is he going to develop the next lighting company? Because, you know, based on skeuomorphic design.
Do you like Hue?
Hue.
Philips Hue?
I don't know what you're talking about.
What do we think?
So Philips has created a LED, it's very expensive, $200 for 3 light bulbs. But you have to get a kit that attaches to your Ethernet.
Jeez.
And controls the light bulbs. You could take a picture of something with your iPhone and say, I want this color. It's
the
their RGB light bulbs, and they will change the room to the color of the thing. I take a picture of you, Baritone. Yeah. My room is dark.
The Hue Philips.
So what's the point
looking
of this?
Because
you can then have any
because then your room can look like Baritone.
Well, I mean, obviously, the nation and the world have been clamoring for this for decades. But outside of that single, you know, world-establishing
use case. I think
it's
very interesting. It's a little pricey, but the idea that you could program any color in your lights and control it with your iPhone. I'm not selling you. Never mind.
I'm low on the list of demands in my life. Like, this room has the wrong light.
Next time I bring a girl back to my place, and she's like, "It's so nice in here. What's
it? It is an essential tool for single men." Nick and I are going to run this
now.
Hue lighting. Yes,
but you could sell that. You could sell that.
How is Hue spelled? Actually,
Hue. It's on the Apple Store. Philips. Search for Philips with one L.
What?
Philips Hue.
Because, thing is I can't get the lighting on these lights in the studio right, so I always end up looking pinker when I'm here. And, of course, they make fun of me incessantly in the chat room. But when I'm there in the studio, I look normal, but here I look like a pink monster. So I'm going to get these.
I've ordered it, but these are 3 months out. But the reason I know about this is we use RGB lights here. They're very expensive professional lighting. But we can make the backdrop, for instance, any color that we want. It's purple right now. I could switch it to blue. There you go.
Speaking of lost me, I'm literally checking
speaking
my email right now.
Can you do Baritone, Chad?
I do not like
just
email.
See if Chad's going to see if he can do Baritone.
Look at more things in my notes.
He's working on it.
So I'm gonna.
You realize there's no way for Chad to do anything and not get in serious trouble for it.
Are we having a racial moment?
No, I think we are. So,
I feel like.
So I think.
Is it time to take over the show again?
I think it's time. So, Leo, don't you have a flight to catch or something like that?
This worked out very well last time.
I want to go to
Occupy
Twit.
Is back.
Occupy Twit. You did that last time.
We did Occupy Twit. That was amazing.
We could do that. After I do the last commercial, I'll get up and leave.
Okay, cool.
And you're in charge.
And should we debate the elections?
I want to go back.
You're voting for Romney. We know already that
you're
for Obama.
Gary Johnson, obviously. You should not vote. The only way to throw away your vote is to vote. And so I recommend, if you're in a lost state where it's already decided.
Whoa, Brian, have you ever
I am going to write in Scott Forstall on my ballot.
You know who's on the California ballot? Yeah. I don't know if she's on anybody else's. We got Roseanne Barr on our ballot.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peace and Freedom Party.
There you go.
No, Brian, that's the tragedy of the commons. That's a common fallacy.
And actually, I'm working on a project right now. So I you know, as you know, and some, most people know, I left The Onion some months ago and started a company.
And we miss you.
So I'm now an entrepreneur, and it's called Cultivated Wit. We do comedy tech projects, and we're doing this thing with Ford Foundation.
As long as you don't call it quit, I'm okay.
It's definitely not going to be called that. So we're
you're working for Forbes?
Ford Foundation is
Ford,
a client.
Ford, wow.
And we're doing this comedic shaming of non-voting friends.
Thank you. Shame him now.
So shame on you, Schwood.
Oh, no.
Shame
okay,
on
keep in mind, keep
I can't
mind.
Even
I
hear
say,
you because I'm so
say,
full of shame right
first
now.
First of all, everyone should know and vote on all of their local issues.
Thank
and
you.
Nobody does. Everyone votes in the one election
because
where
it's so confusing. What is Prop 1274
oh, it's so confusing to operate a supercomputer in my hand every
okay.
day.
I'm going
to
show you guys the one site you need to know.
Okay, okay. We're about to get schooled here.
This is just the one site you need to know. You've heard of Wikipedia. This is Ballotpedia, yes. Ballotpedia.org.
Uh-huh.
Go to your state. For instance, the ballot measures, Nick, you're saying in California. Yes, very confusing. Click on California ballot measures. They list them all. They list what they say. They list who spent money, pro and con. They give all the editorial.
Well, would you look at that?
This is nonpartisan and really good.
How to be Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's Wikipedia for voting. And I just wish everybody who's voting on Tuesday.
Well,
we
live in a time where there's literally no excuse. There are very
Learn
few good excuses.
About
if you're
your
a baby,
people.
I get it. If you're deceased, I get it.
But
if you're
what
a
happens.
Felon in a couple of
I'll
states,
give you an
I
example.
Get it.
Okay,
but in general,
I'll give you an example. In
your
California,
excuse sucks.
California, if you read the voters' ballot, there's a proposition, Proposition 34.
Ooh, 34.
It's called death penalty in the ballot. And you vote yes or no.
Right.
Now, what do you think a yes vote does?
That you're for
the death penalty.
No.
No, you're not, or
exactly.
Yes, you're not.
You're saying you're voting yes to repeal the death penalty, but on the ballot it says Proposition 34, death penalty initiative, yeah. Yes or no. What do you vote?
See, oh,
and so
and
if you wait
exactly,
till you go to the ballot booth to decide what you're going to do, it's too late. You screwed up.
Yeah.
What's up, Leo, this is the exact problem I have with all of these everybody needs to vote initiatives. And I love you, Baratunde. Please don't be mad at me.
I won't.
Is that
I agree. It's screwed up California royally. I agree with
Say
you.
Say that again.
A side effect of that is you get uneducated voters out there.
So,
by the way, when I say don't vote, I mean don't vote for either of the two major parties. They're totally.
Yes, but
if
no one voted for the two major parties, but three people voted, someone would win.
And that's,
so,
I mean,
that's not it's still
happen.
Important to
First
vote.
Of all, even if you live in a non-swing state, you want to keep voting so it doesn't become a swing state.
Yes.
Because that's annoying.
There you
get
go.
Hit
okay,
with all these ads. And
because as it comes down to right now, Ohio decides who the president of the United States is every
which is
single
why,
time.
Which is why if you're not in Ohio, you should vote for some third party, any third party, because your vote matters thousands of times more.
I will
if you
see. This is why I love you. That is a principled and reasonable and like sensical thing to say. And I will vote the way I want to, which is probably not the way you would. But we're participating, and that makes a whole ton of sense.
It's so funny that
you
the libertarian Brian Brushwood is advocating government by fiat instead of democracy.
I don't know what that means. It sounds very intelligent.
I didn't
though.
Hear that at all.
Well,
what I heard is someone saying participate in the democratic process.
No, okay, so what I'm saying is, first of all, we have a problem. The problem is our two-party system. That's one party more than the communists had, and that didn't work out so well for them.
You hate
we
freedom,
don't
you?
We now have them in collusion.
You
when
hate
they
freedom.
Run the debates together. They decide what is and isn't off the table.
Oh, here you go. Here's
candidates.
The headline. Here's a headline on the New York Times. Democrats sue to extend Florida's voting early. So here we are again, back as we were 8 years ago.
You know what Florida did? They decided they used to have this great system.
Yeah, a lot of states have basically restricted your ability to vote this time around.
Right. And it's mainly because poor working class voters can't make it to the polls on Tuesday.
Yeah, correct. They do. Big,
and so by doing so, they disenfranchise.
There's a whole movement called Why Tuesday, which challenges why we even force this to happen on a Tuesday.
Give us a month.
And if any truly freedom loving entity, party, person, whatever. Once maximum participation, it makes the system more legitimate. So
and
if you're fighting to reduce participation,
electrical college,
you're on the wrong side of history.
Because thanks to electricity, Tesla.
My point is your excuse sucks.
So can I
your excuse sucks.com.
That's
all I have to say.
I'm going to let you guys take over. Go ahead. Right, and then I'll come back and do an ad.
We're going to take over. I'm actually going to make a request that people out there go and not only vote, but also go and donate to the Red Cross or something like that for Hurricane Sandy.
$50 iTunes. Let me just push a button.
There you go.
That's the easiest one. iTunes is great.
It was great. I just pushed a button. They didn't even have to give them any money.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
You gave money.
They have your money already.
They have your money.
You know what really works? Apple actually has all your money.
Yes.
And when you spend it elsewhere, you have a license
exactly
to use the money that Apple's holding in escrow in your behalf.
Exactly.
Did you know
they already got it?
They have all of the money.
Apple, the amount of money that Apple has in the bank is $17.50 for every human being on planet Earth.
Holy cow.
Say that one more time.
So the amount of cash that they have in the bank is $17.50 for every human being on planet Earth.
Which is like five times the wages of a third of the world.
You know, interesting, I was reading Horace Dedieu writes a really great blog.
It's fantastic.
He does the numbers. You know, it's all about the numbers. One of the things he pointed out, and he's looking at the financials, is that Apple spends more than three or four times what Google and Facebook spend yearly in it's not R&D, it's like just in technical stuff, so it's not servers. They spend more than twice what Intel spends. Now Intel's a very capital intensive industry. Mm-hmm. They build fabs.
Yep.
Apple spent $8 billion last year on infrastructure.
Wow.
So his question was, well, what is Apple doing that they're spending three times what Google and Facebook are spending twice what Intel is spending on capital expenditures? What are they doing?
They're building a doomsday device, clearly.
They're bringing Steve Jobs back from the dead.
Well, it's nice to have that cash.
We will rue the day.
What do you think they're doing?
We criticize.
I have an idea what they're doing, to be totally honest, but what do you think they're doing?
I would love to hear what you think. I got to guess that part of it is network, because they need to build their network infrastructure. But if they're spending three times what Google and Facebook are spending, it can't be all network. Some of it has to be fabs. I think that they're very focused lately on doing their own chips. You know, look at the A6X. I think they see that as a differentiator from companies that are using kind of more generic ARM chips. But then maybe the building in Cupertino. I don't know.
Robot
what do
Army.
You think? Robot Army. That's a good choice.
So one of the things that Apple does is they take the technologies they develop in one thing and they apply them to everything else.
Yep.
Right. So the iPad they wanted
touch,
it to be really thin.
You know,
so the iPhone was touch, and then they applied that to the iPad, and then they applied it to your touchpad.
Yeah.
The iPad was really thin, and then they applied that to the Macs, the MacBook Air. The MacBook Air was applied to it goes
iMac.
Across everything. Yeah. Right. So the building, the things they're doing in that building will be applied to the devices we own. Okay, and I believe that one of the things that they will be doing in the next few years, I don't know what the time frame is wearable computing, and
right.
I think that's the next iteration.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think you're right.
The future for a lot of people.
Ryan Block.
So could we all be thin and revolutionary?
We could all be walking around with Apple logos on our bodies.
Ryan Block's made a very interesting point. You know, they pulled the Nano, which everybody's making a watch out of, and they made it some big clunky thing. And Ryan of GDGT, of Gadget, said, you know, it doesn't mean they're getting out of wearables. That means what they're doing is they're pulling back and they're going to get into it big time.
Absolutely.
And they don't want you to use a phony wearable when they can make a real wearable.
And the first thing that they're going to do is the thing that actually, you know what one of the best wearable computing companies in the world is today?
What?
Nike.
Yeah.
Nike Plus.
Boom.
The Nike Plus on your wrist, the Nike in your shoe.
Killing it.
And Apple's tied in very closely.
And they're tied in very closely. Yeah. And I think, and Google's trying to do it, and they have the glass and they are also working on other things, which I won't talk about here.
So the blog post in
Amazon's got that wearable Kindle you can strap to your face with duct tape.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. It really changes how I read.
The blog post, Hey Big Spender, he says he was looking at the asset value. See, this is beyond me. I'm not an accountant. Asset value growth for property, plant, and equipment.
Right. PP&E.
And it's...
Go ahead.
Wow.
I'm muttering to myself.
No, I'm impressed. PP&E. That's exactly right. It's $8.295 billion, which is a huge amount of money. Significantly more than these other comparable companies.
Here's what's exciting, right? And when you think about this, we don't know what they're going to do. But we know that they're investing
in the
future. They're
doing something.
And when you think about other companies, you think about nations and states, like what investments
what is
are
the
we
number?
Making? That's pretty cool.
8.2.
So they're still building
for the future. They're spending $1.15 for every human being on the planet.
They're building people. They're building better versions of people.
Amazon, for instance, 487 million.
Yeah.
Million. Microsoft, 583 million. Google, 800 million. Intel, they build fabs, chip fabs, 2.6 billion.
They're a physical company.
Still, 2.6 compared to $8.3 billion. 30% more than Intel, three times Google, four times Microsoft and Amazon.
They're making loyalty chips to install on all of
this. I think that's fascinating.
So I think that what's going to happen is...
look at the growth. It's going...
Oh, absolutely. Whoo,
it's
yeah.
a hockey
it's pretty chart.
So
pretty
so chart. if you wanted to go and do some reporting on this, you should look at the building and what's happening at the building, and you should look at the these other devices, yeah. and you start to look at where they all kind of yeah. converge.
I like
common
wearables.
That is wearable computing.
I like wearables.
I think that's believable, sir.
And I think that wearable computing is the next iteration of these devices, because right now, what are they? They're all flat rectangles.
Yeah. That's not inspiring.
And what's fascinating about wearables, for me, is that right now we look at our devices, mm-hmm. and wearables look at us, right? So that Nike Plus on his wrist looks at him. It looks at what he's doing and monitors
that's
that.
That's a creepy way
and
to
the
put
Google
it.
Glass. It's totally creepy, but
you found
at the,
same the creepiest
time,
way to describe it.
Thank you very much.
Off.
But at the same time, it's also
looking at me. I'm just yelling at my wristband the whole time. You looking at me?
Nick, here's what I like about your suggestion is that it allows I'm not going to say this was their plan before, but it allows Google to do all the public iterations to get people comfortable with seeing other people with big clunky goggles on, right. walking around looking weird. And then Apple will come in and win on design and beauty and fashion. In many ways, they're sort of getting Google to lay the groundwork to allow them to come in and swoop in and dominate.
I think he's bored.
Activate Delta Protocol. Leo Laporte has left the comm.
Good. Does that mean we get to talk politics again?
We never stop talking, baby.
So, all right. So here's the question. Now that he's gone, should we hack his Twitter, his Google Plus, his Facebook?
I feel like these things have all been done before.
Yes, I know.
There's no innovation there.
There's no innovation there. All right. So what's your dream wearable device?
Taking inspiration from Minority Report, I still want that.
The gloves?
I want a broader physical. Sort of IMAX type interface where I can actually drag and throw and flip and move.
And
things.
See, this is interesting. I wouldn't have thought of any kind of wearable thing being a home use device. To me, wearable just means on the go.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have even thought about doing that.
So Brian, if you could have if your glasses could be essentially Google glasses with a camera built in, and they had a screen and a little earpiece and all those things, would you want that?
Yeah, totally.
Would you wear it all the time?
Now, let me flip it back to you. Which would you rather have, that or the car, or a car that one of the self-driving cars that Google?
I live in New York
doing.
City. Don't need a car.
I want a self-driving car so I can get drunk while I drive.
But in New York City, imagine a people mover or something designed for an urban environment.
This is a science fiction author and podcaster, magician extraordinaire, Andrew Main. He and I get into fights all the time because
I'm more talking about himself. Yes,
and already hard to believe, right? One of the things he says is technology outpaces legislation.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Everything outpaces legislation. Grass grows.
That's supposed to
would get fired up. I think of every new law as a barnacle on the ship of America slowing us down. And he's like, don't worry about it, man. We're going to have cars that drive themselves. And then it won't matter if you're drunk or old or blind or a child. You'll have more freedom.
Babies driving.
We were just asking if you could have one wearable device, what would it be? And I believe you would probably pick glasses so you could look at porn in your glasses while you're sitting
baby.
Here having
I'm looking at porn right now.
That is so uncomfortable for the guy you're looking at. He just came to support the show, and now you're objectifying him.
He's hot. Hot, man.
What would your dream wearable device be, Leo?
I don't know. I never really even thought about wearable devices. I don't know.
You're wearing it right now.
Watching me, right?
Well, but it's going to help you because we wander around with our head down, and we look at these things, and we bump into things.
Okay.
What if that device said, hey, you know what? I know that you're actually in a meeting, and so I'm not going to let that text message from Baratunde, who's really not that important, to come through right now. Or... maybe knows that bartender.
No, this is a great question, Nick. So think about the flip side, just on the audio side of things. Yeah. Like right now, if you want to talk to Siri, you have to pull out your phone, you have to press a button, and then she starts listening and you say what you want. What would you be comfortable with your phone constantly listening to you, knowing the context of what you're up to, and so that you could say, hey, Siri, make that happen. And then boom, like an assistant, like a guy standing behind, she was able to do that.
In some ways, yes. And when you think, I was talking to my friend Ron J. Williams. We talk a lot about these tech theories and what's missing. And we talk about the calendar a lot. And the phone knows all these things already. It just doesn't act on them.
Right.
If I've got a meeting 30 minutes from here.
Correct.
And I haven't moved from my current location. And
my
the meeting
Android
starts
phone
in 30.
Does that.
It should be like, yo, dude, you're running late.
Google Now already does
Google
that.
Now does it.
Yeah.
So where's Apple?
Apple's actually left out of this. In fact, Google's doing a lot of these things. For instance, most of the Google dictation, you can say, hello, and it will say yes.
Yeah.
It's listening.
So it's a it's
Google now watches where you go. Yeah. And for instance, it told me this morning, if you don't want to be late for your Pilates class, you should leave now.
So that's
that
so
is wild.
We gotta just switch. I gotta switch back to Android.
Google now is get an but get
but
a
I don't trust
get a
Android.
4. You know, get a Jelly
what
Bean.
Do I have? I have the Nexus 1. Can I run it on the Nexus 1?
No. Ah, Nexus 1.
HTC no. device on T-Mobile.
Wait, you have a Nexus.
Nexus 1.
We know some people. We'll take care of
you. I'll get you some.
I'll show you Leo's going to go get your phone right now.
This is interesting. In the chat room, somebody points out that as far as an always-on listening digital assistant, he said that he would be... this is Euronerd
this
in the chat.
This is an HTC...
What is that?
What is this, Brian? Do you know?
I don't know. It's
That's
a,
what I
looks
got.
Like a phone.
It looks like a phone.
Brian Brush.
When
Brian
did you
Rush,
get it?
Ladies and gentlemen, tech
expert.
Astute
observer from the great
the
state of
the
Texas.
The chat room suggested that he said he would be okay with it always on and always listening if it was linked, tethered to his physical computer at home, but he's way uncomfortable with it being in the cloud with somebody else's
So data. there was an MIT professor that did this experiment where he put cameras throughout his entire house and documented everything, and he was trying to learn how his child learned as they grew up, as children. And one of the things that they did that was really interesting was they later added the ability to be able to go back and say, hey, that thing that happened 20 minutes ago, delete it. Mm. And I think that what has to happen is before we get to the point in society where we allow these things to monitor us, we have to be able to tell them to unmonitor us too. And that is the only way it's going to work. And I don't think – it's not in the best interest of companies, but it is in the best interest of companies.
Of the citizenry.
We had a great conversation with Jonathan Schwartz on Wednesday, the former CEO of Sun. Very engaged in privacy.
Yes.
And really actively saying, you know, companies have got to be very clear.
Absolutely.
Right now they're kind of, you don't need to know what we're doing.
Yeah,
guys.
Just collecting everything.
Just trust us.
And then
and
losing
they need
it
to
every
be
week.
Even more clear than Google is. And I think Google's been fairly clear, but they need to be even more clear than Google is. But if they are, there are huge values to be gained from stuff like this. Now, this is the Nexus 2. This is gigantic.
That's a phone or a tablet?
That's a phablet.
Phablet.
It looks like a mutant.
I'm going to give you my Galaxy
like S3.
That looks like a something
Galaxy
flavor.
S3. They've sold 30 million of these
That's a
now.
Beautiful
this
phone.
Is one of the most successful phones of all time.
Yeah. Wow.
And here's a couple extra batteries.
Well, not more than... You're actually giving him that?
Yeah, why not?
I don't want that phablet. don't give me the phablet. I'm good. I got it.
Mr. Welterweight.
It's like talking on an iPad.
Which is bigger, the iPad mini?
Here's the... When you talked about wearables,
take this too,
and you talked about how we walk around holding this object in our hand, this glowing rectangle.
This is a wearable,
referred to in a great headline. One of the perverse benefits of the blackout in Lower Manhattan last week.
This is great.
So I went in on various with some friends.
Real life impinged.
And so we're walking around the East Village, and it's pitch black, and there's commerce by candlelight in Chinatown shops, and there's people using actual payphones, and you can't use Yelp or Google or Foursquare to figure out where to eat. You go by rumor and word of mouth. I heard there was a place at 10th and A that's serving burgers. We found this place called...
I saw your check. It was awesome.
Yeah, well, we saw this place called Bad Burger, and they were... There's a French woman who's a co-owner, and she was so happy because she said, listen, people are talking to each other. People are walking around making eye contact again. And, you know, they're thinking about doing like once a month, a no tech night to kind of restore the sense of physical community.
I think it's wonderful.
We hunker down and we have our earbuds in and we're walking around with a sound that's not immediate in a place that's virtual and not present for us. And we become hyper connected digitally and hyper disconnected in a very physical, hyper-local sense.
So you want a more binary existence where you have your plugged-in general life, but then from time to time you declare these as off-limits. Like you turn your life into airplane mode.
Mark Bittman, the columnist at the New York Times, he wrote a piece called The Digital Sabbath, and one day a week he leaves his devices
at home.
I know
people who do that.
And I think that's it's pretty great.
People do that, though, really? I mean,
devices are going to have to do it. I think, you know, one of the things, like you just said, one of the things with these devices is they connect us to people that are far away, but they disconnect us from the people that are right in front of us.
Yeah.
And I think that eventually the technology has to solve the problems it creates, right?
Right.
So for example, mobile phones created a problem where people texted while driving.
Yep.
Siri and Google Voice and things like that were a solution
Ford
to that
Sync,
problem,
I'll
right?
Throw in our sponsor.
And I think that technology has it's created so many problems. It has so many problems to fix, and I think that we're now entering that era where those things will.
That's okay.
Solving the new problem.
That's not a bad thing. I have to say, I keep in touch with you guys, all three of you. even though you are far away, I kind of know what you're up to. I saw your check from when you went out to eat.
I got gouged. Yeah,
it was $20 for what was it?
For penne. This
for penne pasta. $20.
They literally boiled water and threw dry goods in it. And then charged us $20 cash only.
I thought the bottom line was because he wrote "Stay safe" at the bottom of that. I thought that was the point.
And it was a good experience. Yeah. You know, you met people. One restaurant I was in, one bar. Whenever someone came in, we gave them a round of applause.
Oh, that's.
And we said welcome.
Oh, that's so neat.
And it was a really, you know, there's something sad
every time there's a disaster
forcing that.
Every time there's a disaster, beautiful. People get that though.
Yeah,
it's a shame that we have to wait for the disaster.
No, I have a friend on Rockaway Beach, Bob Hart. He runs politics for New York One, the premier local news station. He's lived there 14 years, and he's been blogging every day about his experience. And there's like a Sikh group in Occupy Wall Street who are out organizing the Red Cross down there, and he's documented that.
That's cool.
And that's become a story. Like, that's only possible because I'm connected to him virtually.
Absolutely.
And can't physically get there.
Absolutely.
That's a beautiful upside.
Well, and that's my point, is that I keep in touch with you guys. I feel like you're friends because I see what's going on.
We are friends, buddy.
Well, and that's just it. There's no feel like you are actual friends. I mean, think about it. There's a whole generation of kids who are growing up in a world where they're not going to have old friends. They're only going to have this increasingly giant horde of everyone they've ever met. And they still keep in touch with.
And that's also a problem.
That is a huge
because
problem.
Because there is noise in the fringe.
Technology can solve the problem.
What I thought was
exactly.
A beautiful
technology,
thing.
We're at a point where technology has to start solving some of the problems it creates.
It has to start defriending people for me. That's
it
what
does. You brought this up at the very beginning. Twitter self-healed.
Yeah.
It'll work.
It'll work. It's, without a doubt, it'll happen.
Let's take a break because I want to show you how to get stamps.
Oh, great.
Like real stamps?
You know, it's funny, actually.
Leo, this is not even a joke. This is not a setup. This is not anything I planned. And it'll sound like this is a plug. It's not meant to be a plug. I am freaking out because, as you know, my wife is pregnant and we're due to have a baby on December 24th on Christmas
Eve.
And in an effort to get paternity leave, I set up this thing at scamstuff.com. It's an Indiegogo project.
Yes.
I'm trying to sell people some scam stuff. Like, people always say, where do I get this for scam school? Where do I get that for scam school? The idea is, I got to be at home anyway. I can't be on the road touring. So I'm going to set up a little boutique, kind of a woot.com for con artists.
And you're doing great, by the way. 24 grand.
Unfortunately, here's the problem. Yesterday, and this is not even a lie, I started freaking out because I saw how expensive it is. We didn't factor shipping into any of this. We're gonna be doing fulfillment. And I was like wound up tight, totally losing my crap. And then I remembered, and this is not even a joke, stamps.com, I go on and it mentions that you get like up to, what, like 20% off your postage for freight. You get discounts on the priority. And I know all this because I was researching it yesterday.
If you do enough mailing, it actually it costs you nothing.
What? And
you may actually be at the level
like
where you're doing so much that you
coupon zen.
Well, yeah. I don't think I'll get there. But all I know is I need anything that's going to reduce the
singularity.
Expense because we did not factor in shipping on this. And I was afraid that bizarrely, perversely, this was going to end up being a money loser for me.
God.
So I'm definitely going to check out stamps.com. So I want to hear this offer. Go.
So, well, first of all, go to scamstuff.
Scamstuff.com.
And
that
see
sound
all
like
the,
a healthy domain name.
See all the stuff that you can buy. Like,
well, the idea, we
why
made
is it called Scam Stuff?
Stuff?
Are they scam?
Well, he has a show called Scam School. So.
I host Scam School, right? Scam School is all about what the tricks you do at the bar.
It does seem a little off-putting.
It does seem a little like, I'm like, oh, no, here we go again.
It was originally called virustxxx.org.
That's who that I would click on. That'd be my homepage.
Well, one of the things you're going to like about stamps is you will be able to click. This is like professional mailing, right? So you'll be able to click and an email will go out saying your stuff has been shipped. Here's the tracking information. It prints out. It'll probably work with, I don't know if it'll work with Indiegogo, but it works with Etsy, Amazon, eBay, PayPal. Probably works with Indiegogo where it takes. So you're going to do fulfillment. You click a button. It takes the fulfillment. Are they paying with PayPal? I bet they are.
With Indiegogo, they could do a PayPal in it, and it goes in there.
So it'll take it from PayPal, and it prints out a mailing label, so it's all done for you. If it's priority mail, express mail, as you said, discounts. If it's international mail, it fills out all the forms. It really is kind of, the idea is it's, kind of professional shipping for smaller businesses. I think this might be a really good.
By the way, I should point out, people in the chat room are going to scamstuff.com, and apparently it's not forwarding to the Indiegogo page for some people. It should be indiegogo.com/scamstuff.
That works
what it
also.
Forwards
you
to.
Yeah. Yeah, please. Indiegogo.com/scamstuff. Just go directly there. But meanwhile, back to stamps.com. So here's the deal.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I really wanted to plug that. I'm glad you brought it up.
That's why I'm so excited about these guys.
I bought you some diapers. I think it's a good thing. They're for you or the kid?
Good.
Well, I need to know for the size.
Yeah.
Stamps.com. When you get there on the upper right, see, there's an $80 value. That's good. And I'm sure that, Brian, you probably thought, well, that sounds good enough for me. But click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner there and enter our offer code, which is just TWIT. It's easy to remember, T-W-I-T. Each show has its own, so always use the offer code for the show you're listening to. Look at that, $55 in postage. Now, that's going to be over a few months, Brian. You can't use that all at once.
All right.
But the digital scale is great. I mean, really, you'll get an assembly line going with this thing. You plop it on the scale, it prints it out. You don't need any special ink. You don't need a postage meter.
And you're able to label it, like, because one of the things we're going to give out copies of my book when it gets printed next quarter, and we could do media mail. We don't have to go wait in line and convince
person. Can I ask a question, Brian?
No.
How long does it take you to do your hair in the morning?
Today, 0 minutes. It's surprisingly robust.
Nick, if you go in the back, there's a spike taped to the wall.
Really?
Yeah, there's a whole strip.
How do you mean 0 minutes? What, did you just like wake up and like a robot has done your hair for you while you're sleeping?
Like maybe when I wake up, you have one straggler and you just sort of.
Brian invented wearable hair. It's exciting. It's a brand new product.
That's awesome.
And you could look for it in an Apple store near you sometime next year. $110.
Back to stamps.com.
That's it. Just go there. Do it. It's really great. Stamps.com, $110 value. Get the scale, 4-week trial, but you got to use the offer code TWIT. And I'm telling you, if you are in a situation where you're doing a lot of mailing, it is a lifesaver.
I will only use it if next time I come on the show, Leo does his hair like Brian.
That would be an amazing moment for history, for technology.
I don't know.
I will do my hair that way. And Bartunde will watch us.
Oh, that'd be fun. I will definitely take pictures of you guys.
That'd be
hair
fun.
That way.
We could all do our hair
Let's
that
do
way.
It.
That'd be
all
fun.
Right.
That's good. It'd be fun. Let's all do it.
I will need a wig.
You just got to grow it out. Dude.
That's not. Well, winter is coming.
Grow it out. Did you ever have a fro?
Sounds so ominous. Winter is coming.
You can not say those words without being. I had a 10-inch fro.
Did you really?
Huge. Huge.
Are there any pictures existent?
Billions.
Where I want to see
on
some.
The interweb.
Oh yeah, there's pictures of him.
I had cornrows, big fro, twist. Never had full dreadlocks, but I used to change my hair like every
if I
week.
Could grow a fro, I would totally.
As a man of many because
it makes
heads.
Your head look big.
Yeah, and it makes your face small.
Oh, that's not good. That's
when I cut all my hair. My face was huge.
Kenyatta has great hair.
Yeah, Kenyatta's got the super fro. Kenyatta cheese.
Super fro, yeah.
Man, that's actually
if I
not
Google
even a lie,
Baratunde Afro, will I find it?
I don't know what you'd find.
If you Google Baratunde, you might not want to do that.
What does that mean?
There's some bad.
Oh, I'll
stuff
do the images.
There.
I'll do the image search here.
No lie, Baratunde. That's part of the reason that the ridiculous Guile hairstyle was, so it makes my head a triangle to make my
is that you?
Not so fat.
That is me in a little polyester suit. The flaring collar.
That's so cute.
Wow, we're going for the close-up, I see.
Okay. Yeah, let's zoom in on that.
That's great.
Okay. Well, if we found that, we should be able to find an afro here. I don't know who that is.
I'm looking on I'm going deep. Looks I'm like going Glenn into...
Beck. Yeah, Glenn Beck's crying about Baratunde.
I'm going deep. I'm going into...
Do you have, like, special techniques that you can go really deep?
I do have some special techniques.
Do you ever do this, Baratunde, and go, God, that's history going here.
Whoa, is this... Wait,
your whole
hold
life
on,
is flashing
on.
Before your eyes.
Yeah. There I am as Barack Obama. Yep.
Wow, you look just like him.
Oh, this is a good one.
Day I got an article.
Oh, I found it. Here it is.
Look at this.
Here's the afro.
That's not real. That's
I got it one. Right here. Huh? Ba-doom, boom.
That's in the White House.
Afro. No, that's the State House in Boston.
This, all right.
That's
I remember the guy who took that.
That's when you look like the Fresh Prince of Bel Air.
West Philadelphia.
You heard the joke, and this is what somebody said when Scott Forstall was fired. They said, prepare 3 envelopes. You've heard that one.
No.
Fellow just hired as a CEO at a high-tech company. The CEO stepping down met with him privately and gave him 3 numbered envelopes. He says, open these up in order. If you run up against a problem, you can't solve. So things are going fine, okay. But 6 months later, sales kind of take a downturn, and he's getting a lot of heat. He's at wit's end, but he remembers the envelope, so he goes and he goes to his drawer and opens the first envelope, and the message reads, blame your predecessor. Good advice. The new CEO calls a press conference, tactfully lays the blame at the feet of the previous CEO. Press says, okay. Wall Street responds, sales pick up, problems behind him. Year later, again, slight dip in sales, problems combined with a serious product issue, maybe an antenna issue, I don't know. Maybe maps didn't work so well. Having learned from his previous experience, the CEO opened the second envelope. The message read, reorganize. Mm. So he did this. Company rebounds. After several consecutive profitable quarters, the company once again falls on difficult times. The CEO goes to his office, closes the door, opens the third envelope. The message reads, prepare three envelopes.
Do you think,
we're at the second envelope? Is that the stage we're at here at Apple?
Great. That's really
envelope
funny.
Number two. Let's see.
What to next?
What to next? What's their next story? Well, Google had an announcement that they called off. Well, go ahead, Brian.
Well, we were just talking about Android, and I guess this last quarter, Android finally surpassed 75% of the market. Is that right?
In that quarter sales.
Yes, and that's important.
That's not cumulative figure.
Quarter sales.
Not
cumulative.
And on top of that, they hit the same number that Apple touted on number of apps, 700,000 apps in the Google Store.
Yay. That's right. That's a rough tie. Close enough.
I think the three envelopes, we have a name for the show.
Yes, we do.
Three envelopes, one with spiky hair, one with an afro, and one that is just beats the crap out of people in bars.
I love it when you guys are all together. It's so much fun.
It's a great team. It's a tag team.
And I thank you for bringing some Prosecco.
We usually bring whiskey. This time we switched it up.
Yeah, we switched it.
I have whiskey if you want to move on.
Do you?
Oh, God, yes.
I mean,
John, would you pick out a fine whiskey or a bourbon?
I'm not one to deny.
Bourbon or whiskey?
Bourbon, please, John.
A bourbon. I thought he was. You looked like a bourbon man.
I could drink a bourbon. Welter.
Welter.
It's funny. So I went to this week. I was writing about Apple. I was writing about, had to go to the Windows event and wrote about that.
It was an amazing month.
And then I went to the Google event. But at the same time,
the Google Not event. There was
the
no
Google
event.
Not event. We all went to their offices. The reporters went there and they showed the things. And a lot of the reporters there and the bloggers were saying, how do we explain all of these devices to people and tell them what to buy? And none of us could answer that question.
Yeah. Everything just looks the same. Now, I've been covering this for 30 years.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, like, what is your theory
on this? I don't remember ever. I don't know what's in that bottle, but I don't think anybody should drink that.
You should have bought a cart. My goodness.
First of all, I think they like brown liquor.
Oh, that's the white whiskey.
This is King Cake liquor.
That's not going to my face.
Yeah. You like the Woodford Reserve? Go for Woodford's it. That's beautiful. The one. I have several bottles of that.
Do you think that we can somehow figure out how to like make my car drive itself back to the city after this?
There's an app
for
that.
You can stay at my place.
I'm
going to be in Australia. Stay at my place.
When are you going to Australia?
Tonight.
Really?
Yeah.
You want to just camp out in Petaluma?
Yeah, we'll just camp here.
It's one bed, but it's a big one.
Can you stop and feed my dog on the way to the airport?
Pixel.
Yeah. I got a bunch of people who are disappointed, Leo, because I said I got home to AUS, of course, Austin, and everyone's like, oh, my gosh, you're here in Australia.
Oh, yeah, we're doing a meetup it's apparently Tuesday's a big drinking day in Australia. Not every Tuesday. Actually,
I'm sure it's not just words that end in day.
I'm classy. I'm going to drink it out of a wine glass.
Tuesday is the Melbourne Cup, which is apparently a big horse race in Australia. That's a big party day.
Cups are so many things.
And we are arriving. Events? Look at that. Nipper and his master's voice. How do you like that?
That's
the RCA
great.
Dog. That, oh, you don't want that one. All right.
So
we're going to have a meetup at the Hearts Pub, which is at the Rocks in Sydney on that night, 7:30 p.m.
I think
on
I'm the mayor of a place
Tuesday, Melbourne Cup Day, if anybody wants to come by. I'd love to see you. We're going to have lots of people.
Excellent.
So you've been doing this for 30 years.
30 years I've been in. I've never seen anything like this. And I think what's really changed is these devices now are small enough, popular enough, and affordable enough that they're mass consumer devices. So the technology industry had not been, until recently, creating the number of mass market devices that it had in the past.
Yeah.
We've had big Christmas, you know, the Commodore 64 Christmas or the Furby Christmas. But now everybody wants a smartphone. Everybody wants a tablet. Everybody's looking at Windows 8. And there's a vast number of products announced. I don't remember any year ever anything like
this. So I have to say, I've always been a totally nerdy gadget guy. And, like, I literally just got so excited. I remember waiting in line 6 hours for the first iPhone, you know, barely sleeping the night before an announcement for, like, a new video game system, whatever it was. And now I don't care.
It's overwhelming.
Care.
Well, it's too much.
It's fatigue.
I don't care every week.
Is it just the tech journalists going through it, or do you think real people are having it?
I would still love the devices. I still love the iPhones and all these devices. And I think what happened this time with the iPhone, it was the first time I didn't go wait in line, and I waited a week before I got the device.
What about you, Schwood?
As far as what? Like, how
are you still excited?
Do you still care as much?
I'm excited that Leo mentioned the Commodore 64 and the Furby, two devices
in the same
era.
So are you guys still excited about all these devices, or do you look at the new iMac and say, it's just a little thinner?
I felt that way for the first time during the iPad announcement. I was really annoyed because I bought an iPad 3 4 months ago. And now it's like I feel stupid taking two plugs around. It's like I really felt Apple fatigue at that moment. We talk about cashing in and diminishing your brand. Apple has really diminished its brand for me. And I'm somebody who is predisposed to want to like shiny objects, but I'm feeling the same thing.
I'm actually a little concerned that we're all turning into the Wall-E world, where we're just so it's all about distracting us with the latest gadget, the latest piece of Chrome, that they're all disposable. They're going to fill the landfill, and there really isn't any real value or real change. And it's all about mass consumerism.
What is the solution for the landfills and the environment?
The solution is we are going to, as a society, transition to artificial scarcity. We are going to start to want objects that are not physical anymore. We're going to want certain fake objects that are in the MMOs that we play. We're going to want certain exclusive backgrounds or exclusive experiences.
Well, that's already happened.
Well, exactly. It's only going to get better, and it's going to be more environmentalist result.
Better or worse?
It's good. Well, no. We are built to want new things. That's very clear from what we've seen. Consumerism
that's a biological,
is in our society.
Yeah, that's
now,
a biological drive.
We can fight it. We can fight it, which in society, fighting human nature hasn't worked out very well.
Right.
Or we can figure out a way to channel it in a way that is healthy, and not detrimental to the environment. So, and I think artificial scarcity and artificial objects are going to become the new status symbols.
We should play Diablo 3 all the time.
Absolutely.
So one of the things one of the reports that I wrote about a couple weeks ago was interesting, was about the how long people wait to upgrade their phones, and it's slowing. And so in 2007,
that's good news.
Look at you getting data.
Yeah, in 2007,
fancy man.
Because I would have said exactly research, the opposite.
PC growth hasn't changed. I mean, it's grown flat, for Apple, right? But it's flat as far as the entire industry goes. The amount of time people wait to buy televisions, all these things has remained the same. But what's fascinating is in 2007, Americans upgraded their phone every 18.7 months on average, right? In 2010, which was the last time this report was done, it was 21.1 months.
Right.
So it has stretched three months.
Those are skewed. Those are short. Because, for instance, 2007, maybe they were all buying iPhones.
No, but you can see the curve dip. What's fascinating, though, is if you look at Finland, and this is just one country that I noted, it was 41.8 months in 2007.
Wow.
Yeah. Now it's 74.5 months. And Europe,
that's crazy talk. That's 6 years.
Exactly. But I think that in Europe, if you look at the numbers.
Well, mobile penetration.
You look at the numbers on these for a lot of these European carriers, people wait much longer than they do in the U.S. I mean,
there may be a couple of factors in that. One, Europe experienced wireless saturation much sooner than we did, so they're further along.
And economic crisis.
So that could be the future. There's the economic situation. There's also the pricing is very different there in terms of level of subsidy of handsets. That should scale in the same direction, though. Like, that's a dramatic shift from 40 months to 70 months.
Yeah,
percentage wise.
Well, it's Nokia country, so it's a
yeah. So they have a dominance.
But if you look at the numbers across the board, there isn't a country where the number has actually accelerated. It's always
a lot of the interesting things are happening in hardware.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the opposite of what
say.
He said.
What is the average contract length in Finland, for instance? Is it the same as 2 years?
Well, that's the thing. They might not have
the same here.
Contract
well, it's not
might not
six
even be
years.
A,
6 years is a long time.
They should just do that.
We would like you to buy. I don't know what the Finnish
we own
is.
You for 6 years.
Always kills the
So if you sign right here, you'll be using this Nokia mobile flip phone for the next 6 years.
I hope you enjoy it.
We don't make phones that can last 6 years. That seems impossible.
So, okay, Brian, the environment is perfectly fine on its own, and with the Earth.
Whoa, Tiger.
Slow down there, Spikey.
Spikey versus Tiger.
Okay, tonight I got my drink. I'm just going to sit back and watch the prize fights are on.
So given that people do upgrade these devices every 21 months in the U.S., right, and a longer period of time overseas, where do they all go when they upgrade and they upgrade and they upgrade?
Oh, they go to space.
What is the environmental cost here?
You know what I wish is that there was some place that we could keep all of our goods for safekeeping for like a safe amount of time, like some kind of giant vault, so that when it was economically viable to go back and recycle them, we could do so. Oh, wait, that exists. It's called a landfill. And I'm not saying irresponsible dumping. I'm not saying that you should poison the earth. I'm saying that there should be responsible management of the disposal of our devices so that we could get them back.
Do you know what this sounds like?
Do you think at some point we'll be mining landfills
Absolutely. 100%. They're already doing that.
Yeah.
And anthropologists go back and they dig out giant cubes from landfills in the 70s, and they're able to see how many condoms
But that's a limited. That's not recycling.
We're talking about actual.
That's called archaeology. That's of a limited value. Hey, we're going to build these landfills so that thousands of historians in the future can see what we
can write articles.
What I'm saying is, there's already entire industries that are being built on how to take advantage of what's in landfills, and we're seeing outliers right now.
Yeah.
But look, man, humans are smart. You don't ever bet against humanity. They figure out a way to squeeze a profit out of everything.
Every once in a while, you should bet against humanity. We make bad decisions.
I don't think there's any percentage of betting against
humanity. I didn't know that Brian Brushwood was a Republican.
How are you going to collect?
So he's a libertarian.
Look, dude, I do not call you names. Don't call me a Republican.
No, but here's what I love about your proposal, Brian.
Yeah.
You're basically arguing for treating, disposing of your technology like nuclear waste. You're arguing for a Yucca Mountain for your iPhones.
Well, we're already doing that.
And we'll just put these things away and cash them and basically burn. Which is really, it's like a debt also, if you think about it. Like, you're saying our grandkids are going to fix this because we're not smart enough yet to sort it out.
And that's true, too.
That's an interesting burden/opportunity. You're betting on the future.
It's a good take, and I'm going to go for that because I built an entire business on getting people to buy new crap as much as possible. So, I wish we had a Gazelle ad here.
Would be so perfectly timed.
You know what, though? I'm big into digital goods. That's what you were saying, right?
Yeah.
Digital goods. For instance, audiobooks.
Yes.
There's no cost to the landfill.
There is in that you're supporting a model.
Way to go, Barry.
It's indirect.
Bring us down.
It's indirect.
Shut up. Ixnay on the ostke.
No,
of course there is. But it's a fairly, that's a lightweight cost on that.
Given
the amount of entertainment you get from a single audiobook, I loaded up, I'm going to be in a 14 and a half hour flight. It's almost paranoid. I got like 20 books.
Did you put my book on there?
No.
I read it.
How to Be Black is not on
You know
there.
I read it.
I know you read it.
I read it, and I imagine you when I read it.
So I'm going to put it on here right now.
Reading it.
You can get it from Audible, which is actually, I signed up last time I was on the show, and I'm still a member.
Are you happy?
Good.
Yeah, and I signed up with...
Do you ever get time to listen?
I go through phases. You know what I listened to that was amazing was...
How to Be Black by Baratunde.
How to Be Black by Baratunde. No, I listened to...
I listened to your book, man.
You did listen to it. You live tweeted it.
I did. There were so many good things in it.
Thank you very much.
What can I say?
The book that I listened to was Ready Player One.
Oh,
that book
amazing.
Is dope.
Will Wheaton narrates that. Look at that.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
listen on
book.
The airplane.
I actually, you could tell you're listening to a good book when...
Wait a minute, stop. It's reading it. Hold on. I don't know how to...
Yo, that's
how
what
does
happens
this work?
With one of these devices.
Really, Leo?
So, I would find myself literally, I would be sitting in my garage in my car listening to the end of the chapter
you
for
can't,
like an
with
hour.
The engine off, I hope.
With the engine off.
Okay.
And a hose. Like,
I just...
It's weird about audiobooks. It just made me want to sit in my garage in my car.
No. But don't do that unless you have ventilation. Leave the door open.
Exactly.
Okay?
But no, when you can't leave... That is a great sign.
I drive around the block a couple extra times.
I heard that, so it's going to be a movie.
I can't wait.
It's sold as a movie. Who's going to play the evil bad guy?
No spoilers, because I'm just starting
Agent Smith?
Jeez. The guy from...
I'm a half hour...
My rug. The Big Lebowski guy.
Jeff Bridges is the bad guy.
Nice.
Dude is the bad guy.
That works.
This book was written by Ernie Klein, who 12 years ago, or I guess, no, 13 years ago, before either of us were anything, he wrote the script for Fanboys that later became a compromise movie with the Weinstein Company.
Yeah.
He's a slam poet in Austin. And when I heard about the massive success, this thing, once it got put up there, he got a $500,000 advance, and then the movie rights auctioned for $500,000 more, and it could not happen to a nicer guy.
Nice.
He is genuinely one of the best people on planet Earth.
Yeah.
He's a super nice guy.
That's really good to hear because the book is so. I listened to it on a recommendation from this show, actually.
Yeah.
So Jeff Bridges and then Ellen Page will play the girl who is adorable.
Yeah, she's adorable.
How old is she?
Adorkable.
She's 25. We could date. Is she single? keep going.
You're turning Twit into OKCupid. Okay, I love it.
Yeah.
OKTwit.
OKTwit. Because so, wait a minute. So, many.
So yeah, we've got three books now. We've got Nick's book.
Alan, if you're listening, call me.
I'm glad it's you, because usually I'm Mac on the girls, and it's really...
Now, how's that work out for you?
It's not working out so good, and it's really kind of disgusting when an older man like me...
It will become... There's a line of creepiness that you cross.
I crossed the creepy line about 20 years ago.
I think I'm kind of approaching
you. No, you're good. You're gray. That's not a good...
Yeah, but I've been gray for like 10 years.
Yeah, that gray is not on its own.
Yeah, I know that. You know that, but I don't know if the girls
know
that.
Maybe I'll just carry an old photo with me. Schwit
has a great point.
You know, I used to have an afro.
And so we're talking about Audible.com, an amazing sponsor, which makes all this quite
possible.
Actually,
hey, Baratunde, remember when I got all fired up about single data points to explain statistics?
Yeah.
Do you know why I was all fired up about that?
Why, Schwit?
Because I'm reading Thinking Fast and Slow by Kahneman, and that's a big thing. It's like the human brain is not built to take that big picture. We see what's right in front of us. We have gut reactions, and that's why I got all fired up about that.
Well, that's a great point, and I think it's adorable that you believe in facts and science as a way to sway people.
So he's all about logos. You're a little bit about pathos.
I think it's adorable that you believe in facts and science.
And this guy's just about hitting on chicks.
Do you guys want to hear actually a funny
No, because I'm going to finish this ad, and then we'll let you
don't walk on the
tell
ad,
us a funny story. He didn't even know. This was the beauty of it. He didn't even know we were doing an Audible ad. He was just talking about Audible. And I like that.
I did not know.
Naturally.
But so, I remembered that I signed up from the last ad.
Right. You are an Audible author. I Live in the Future, Here's How It Works by Nick Bilton.
Mm-hmm.
Baratunde is an Audible author, How to Be Black by Baratunde Thurston.
Yes,
also
sir.
In paperback.
Paper black.
You should paper black.
Paper black.
You should get all of them. Get a Kindle, get a paperback, get a hardcover, and get audio. In fact, Brian, we got to get Scam School on.
I'm behind the times with you guys. I did an ebook first with Scam School, books 1 and 2, but yeah. I'm steps behind. I did make it my first publishing deal signed, so that's why we're gonna have Scam School.
Good man.
2013.
So you're gonna have to take one of these out because we've got a way to get two books, and there's three we've got.
Ooh, it's in the cage.
It's Sophie's choice. It's a cage match. So here you go. Audible.com/twit2. You're going to be signing up for the Platinum account. That's 2 books a month. So next month you can get another book. But if you want to do it free, first month is free. First two credits are free. Each of these is one credit. And you can cancel anytime, pay nothing, keep those books forever. And I got one more book for free if you go to audible.com/Sanderson. This one is apt. This is anybody could get this. You should all get it. Mm. If you're an Audible member or not, you don't need a credit card. It's called Legion. It's a novella. This is interesting. They're just giving it away to anybody who wants. And it's really good. It's about a guy. They call him Legion because he hallucinates all these other characters around him.
Okay.
And they solve mysteries. It's really an interesting book. I really like it. Legion by Brian Sanderson. Here's how you get that for free. And even if you are not intrigued by Audible, you don't want to sign up, whatever. Mm-hmm. Please do me a favor. Get this one because you'll love it. Audible.com/Sanderson. Okay.
Sanderson.
S-A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N. And we thank Audible.
Great ad.
Great sponsor.
I've been on Audible since before the iTunes integration.
Did you see that Facebook's going to give you're going to be able to buy physical gifts now?
Yeah, you can buy physical gifts.
From who?
And they're kind of, but they're bad.
What are the cheesy?
Gifts? There's the friendship bracelets. Like they asked me to buy a Baratunde a friendship bracelet. They obviously don't know that I already got him one.
So first of all, I'm disappointed because I haven't received it yet.
Is that the string that you tie around, and when it falls off, that means you're not friends anymore?
Let's see what the let me see if I can buy some.
Where do I get these?
So what happens is, look at this. Okay, so.
No, I want to get a gift. So where do I go?
So look for birthday.
Birthday. So somebody's birthday. It's Carrie D. Herrera's birthday.
I should say buy her a gift.
This is clearly my cue to go.
I don't see buy a gift.
Refill my drink.
I don't get a buy. Maybe you're special, Nick.
So maybe I'm special. So I could buy.
Here, let me plug in Nick's computer.
Oh, I don't want people to see my screen.
You've learned a lesson from my life.
I have learned a lesson from your life. I'll tell you. So I could buy somebody, Stacy, a brownie Pop Bites for $38.
What is that? Those are good. I love those.
Amelia's chocolate caramels for $11.
Great.
Bagu leather zip clutch for $40. Am I really going to buy someone? I don't even know who Stacy is, to be quite honest.
Probably we should do it for somebody you know.
Stacy, I'm so sorry. You just got dissed.
Here you go.
In front
of
the
nation. I just went to a dude, right? And it says, buy Francois pencils for Culture Bus for $6. I mean, these gifts are ridiculous. It could be great if they decided.
Well, they
plug in. It needs to be curated.
Somebody stole Spikey. He's gone,
what
by the way.
Schwartz? He's going to get his good gift.
So what could be great is if they mined your data feed, because they do that anyway. They look in your underwear drawer. They do all those
they
things.
They need to tie it to Pinterest and see what you pin, what your friends pin, and that would be like
exactly.
a registry.
And then it could actually work, and then it could work. But think about it, okay? So they have a billion users, right? So if they just did 1% of people, if they could get 1% of their users, I mean, this is millions and millions of gifts
a day.
This is
monetization.
Yeah,
exactly. This is why all the Facebook employees are selling their stock.
I know.
Because it's going to be huge.
Yeah.
Sheryl Sanderson sold a tiny amount.
Sanders
sold a tiny amount. Yeah. Sanderson's the book.
Sorry.
Sanders sold
she
a tiny
sold,
amount.
She wanted to go on vacation and buy a new purse. I don't know, whatever.
But CFO sold almost half of his stake.
Yeah.
47%.
So the big sell is actually going to be November 14th when 777 million shares go on sale and they come out of the lock.
So if you're an investor, should that be cause for concern? Is it a sign that the people who are like the CFO who knows better than anybody else how Facebook is going to do?
I would say if I were an investor at the price that the stock is right now.
It's cheap now.
It's cheap. I would buy. And I would go long on it. But at the same time, I think that a lot of investors today don't like to do that. They don't look.
This is what
look
I love
Facebook
about Twit is about, because I leave because you guys are talking about friendship bracelets, and I come back and you're already making my recommendations.
Yeah, you got to move faster than that, Brian. Yes, you can't
so
just
connected to the matrix.
I would probably wait till November 14th when the stock goes on sale and the 777 million shares go on sale, and a lot of people will sell because it's employees that came after the first round. So the stock will drop more then. I would buy then, and I would go along with it because I think that Facebook is going to be around in 10 years, and I think it's going to be essentially a blue chip for today.
So Sheryl Sandberg sold...
I don't mean to go all business on you, but...
I brought it up. She sold $7.5 million worth of shares, but that's just a small amount of her overall stock.
Yeah, and that's really nothing when you think about
it. It's nothing.
I'm sorry, it was not the CFO.
Basically $0.
Like I said, she wanted a new clutch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who else?
What a world.
Who was it that sold a big chunk of his of his stocks? I can't find it in this story. But nothing to worry about. Everything's going to be great. They're going to sell gifts, friendship bracelets.
Friendship. That is the business
model. That's the future of Facebook.
You know the thing I do admire about that is that it's not advertising.
I agree.
And it's another way. Exactly.
Yeah, the dominance of advertising for monetization of the future is a bit much.
Yeah. And I think there are other things.
How about the Village Voice suing Yelp for the use
that's
of
dumb.
God,
Dismissed.
Really?
I want to be the judge.
That's like Bartunde suing anyone that uses the word Bartunde.
Well,
this is weird because on the one side, like which is a bigger, more egregious violation? You know, Apple essentially suing over rounded corners or the Village Voice suing for best of.
I don't know.
Well, Apple, because it's a bigger company, and I think it stifles innovation. Stifling the use of the word best of, even if they won, is not really.
But if they won, that would be a failure of humanity. That would be a case to bet against humanity.
Yes, but look at the fact that we have companies like Coca-Cola that have copyrighted the color red. You know, I mean, it's like...
That's not true.
There are certain companies that have copyrighted the colors of their logos.
Jesus.
Yes.
That was amazing. Like, Bertudy calls out Nick, and Nick just keeps on going.
New York Times, man. Got a lot of big mo behind
him. I have a question, since we're all kind of nerds here.
Kind of.
How do we feel about LucasArts Films?
There you go. There's a
story. Nothing but win. There is nobody on planet Earth who is just destroyed. My heart was broken by George Lucas. I was done. Like, when they came out with this this terrible comedy skit show that's nothing but riffing on the Star Wars movies, I was like, that's it, I'm out. You had a great run, Lucas.
The man with spiky hair and he likes things.
I'm done. And then all of a sudden, now people are going to get all bent out of shape saying like, oh, I'm not sure about Disney-fying everything or
Disney
whatever.
Disney did a good job with Marvel, though, didn't they?
They did a fantastic job.
That's right. You think Avengers was good. And now you could have the Hulk body slam Jar Jar Binks. It would be a very good moment.
What do you think the next, if we have to predict, what is the next Star Wars going to be?
Well, I mean, before
2015, they've already said it. Okay, Christopher Nolan directs.
Oh, that's good.
Jeff Bridges.
That's good.
Dark Knight.
Yeah,
dark. Force.
It's gonna be. That's great. It's gonna be depressing. It's gonna be like a post-apocalyptic Disney theme park.
Disney does The Road.
With just like sad children everywhere.
Have you read The Road? By the way,
don't do it.
Oh, it's the greatest book ever.
No, but it will break your soul.
It was my favorite writer on planet Earth.
I listened to that in audio.
It's a great audiobook.
It is. While I'm living in New York in the winter, it was great. It broke my heart.
It broke my heart, too.
Dystopic future. Yeah. I really, love that stuff.
Yeah, really hard.
It's great.
No, here's what I love. Lucas is donating $4
billion to education.
So he took the money he made from Disney.
Yeah, from the sale.
And he's giving it to education. What does that mean,
gifts.
Though?
So according to... Friendship bracelets for every human on Earth.
Friendship bracelets for half of my friends.
We're all friends now.
To what education? Is it a foundation?
Disney plans to release 41 years. I'm reading HuffPo Impact. Edutopia.
Turns out it's re-education.
Edutopia, a foundation that empowers innovative coursework in schools, is a likely choice. That's a speculation right now. So it hasn't been publicly designated.
Okay,
it's part of an existing foundation, the George Lucas Education Foundation.
So here's the thing, though, that's really interesting. So I was talking to Kevin Kelly a couple weeks back, and he was saying, super smart guy, definitely smarter than most people in tech. And he was saying, do you know how difficult it is to spend $1 billion? And he said, how would you spend $1 billion if you had it? And I had a really hard time answering the question because every time I'd answer, he would say, well, you have to build the infrastructure to spend $1 billion.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense.
It's really fascinating.
Bill Gates always said that. But people said, why don't you do more philanthropy when he was still running Microsoft? He says, I'm too busy. What I'm going to do is wait until I have the time to spend it right. It's hard. It's probably easy to spend $1 billion wrong.
Poorly, yeah.
But at the same time,
$1 billion is a big number.
It's a huge number to spend.
Now, is that a British billion or an American billion?
Canadian.
Canadian billion.
Yeah.
It's a little those dollars are pretty good. They got that shale oil.
This is one of those things that they talk about in Abundance and The Rational Optimist. How great is it that we live in an age where it's fashionable for these billionaires to outspend each other on something that's good for humanity.
I love that.
That's a great culture great. To encourage.
Absolutely. And I think, I wasn't a big fan of Bill Gates, but when he became this philanthropist, I said, man, this guy is a hero.
I like
what
Bill.
He's doing. I like him now. I love him.
I heard Bono speak in the past month, talk about one.org and what they've done for debt relief and disease reduction. And what I loved about what he said was he's like, look, I have a massive ego. I am a megalomaniac and I want to use that for good. I acknowledge this makes me look and feel good. That's not the point.
That's a little too much honesty.
The point, though,
are you talking about Bono here?
I mean, I think in this case, Bono and I are the same person. I'm Bono.
I have a friend who's a rock star.
Spoiler alert. I didn't say he was my friend. I heard him speaking.
Got it.
Yeah, he was speaking at his public event.
Well, part of the reason that we're seeing so much giving, according to Abundance, is
Bono
that unlike...
I can tell I'm a little drunk. I just picked up the microphone and tried to drink
from it. No, that's what we all do. That's what we all do now. What's that, Schwit?
I was just saying that according to Abundance, part of the reason that we see so much, big philanthropy among billionaires nowadays is because the money's being made by younger people. After they've made their billions and they're 35, suddenly asking,
have a whole life
what's my
to live?
Second act? Right. I want to do a sustainable thing that'll feel good the way
it's a long tradition, though. You look at Andrew Carnegie, who really had a crappy reputation for how he treated his steel workers. And he wanted to rehabilitate his reputation, so he bought a library for every town in America. And now, when you think of Carnegie, you probably mostly think of Carnegie stuff. Hall, and you
was much older. Carnegie was much older when he
was an old man. That's exactly right. Yeah.
But now we're seeing, and of course, he was less interested in effectively educating the
America.
No,
it was all about rehabilitation of his reputation.
Right. So, whereas nowadays, people are like, well, if this is going to be my second act and what I want to do, they consult with people like, how can I get the maximum impact for my giving dollar?
Correct.
You know what I'd like to do is consult with Tom Merritt right now, if you don't mind.
I would love to hear. Is he here?
He's here.
That's
he's going to tell us what's
I love when Tom talks.
Coming up in the week ahead. Take a look.
Great. Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a few of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Monday, November 5th, the GigaOM Roadmap Conference begins in San Francisco. Tuesday, November 6th, Halo 4 hits the Xbox 360. Wednesday, November 7th, Ad Tech happens in New York City. Thursday, November 8th, Angry Birds Star Wars comes to Windows Phone. And Samsung's Galaxy S3 Mini arrives in the UK. Also, Groupon announces their earnings. And Friday, November 9th, the Acer Iconia W510 Windows 8 tablet, not Windows RT, arrives from $500. And AT&T gets the Galaxy Note 2 that'll come along for $300.
A pen?
That's a look at some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead. Back to you,
Leo. A pen. You didn't know that?
That's awesome. Nick Milton's response to the visual on the Galaxy Note 2.
Yeah,
he said, is that a pen? That
look, when you pull it out, you can start. It's
called a stylus.
That's actually kind of cool.
It's called a stylus.
It's awesome. You can write a phone number. Yeah.
Hey, so I have a question for you, Leo.
Yes, sir.
So we were just talking about I just drew you a smiley face.
Aww. With the,
there you go. Because that's
better than a friendship bracelet.
I have a question for you.
I'm going to save that forever.
So we were talking before about the fact that, you know, there's a lack of excitement about these devices and that there's the monotony of them and so on. And as someone who has a show that talks about new gadgets and new things like that, where there's starting to be a little bit, maybe it's more with the people that cover it, but there's starting to be a little bit, you know, less interest in these things. How does that affect what you do?
I've always focused. In fact, when gadgets started becoming the thing, I was kind of negative about it. I didn't want to become the gadget guy. Everybody always wanted me. Oh, come on, talk to us about gadgets. You know, Regis and Kelly. We don't want to see gadgets. I never wanted to be that. My interest was always how to use technology to change the world, how to have a voice, how to democratize people, how people can express themselves, how technology can be used. And I have very mixed feelings about this whole idea of okay, Twit. That's already
somebody just did this.
Already,
can you pull this up?
What's
is there an okay, Twit?
Just go. Just search for @NickBilton on Twitter, and the last one.
Oh my gosh!
It's got.
So I really have mixed feelings about becoming a shill for this ever growing
CES industry.
You know, industry, and so I think we can do better. I think we can do better. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't search for @NickBilton. I get it. Yeah.
Good point, Schwood. Sorry about the retweets.
One place that I have a big pulpit for this is the radio show, because that speaks to normal people, about a million normal people a week, about technology. And one of the things I try to do is to calm down this overheated need
to buy.
Here, I'll do it on tap bots. It's a little more.
Can I share? I'll put it in the somebody
Nick
just tweeted it.
Built
in there. I just put it in there. Look,
there you go. Look at that.
That's beautiful.
You and the girl from
I feel like you won.
We look quite nice together.
We came in here. There's definitely no. So
what do you think? What do you think we would call our first child?
Creepy.
No, that says the creepy guy.
Creepy doll.
You're projecting.
I think we would call it Bartender.
That was made by
someone
Cheetos.
Years ago.
Who made that?
Cheeto.
Cheeto
in our chat room. Well done, Cheeto.
So years ago, someone named
Kudos Cheeto
named their dog after me. And that was like
somebody named their dog.
I don't flattering, think that's, weird I think
that's,
thing.
Yeah, that's not as cute
that's
as the Ellen Page lookalike with me. And
no,
that's
you, not good. You won. You won that contest. Sir.
You know, I watched. There's
well
a
played.
Great, there's a really wonderful.
I'll just send that to my friend Ellen Page.
Really?
See what she thinks about it.
Really?
Tell her
friends
to,
with her.
No. Do you think you know how people go
her.
Like this? They go, call me, and they put their.
They
hand
don't
up.
Do.
Do you think
do that
the kids today are like text me?
No, that definitely happens. I was emailing. I was texting.
He was texting. Right?
So what do you do? What's the universal gesture for texting?
I was running away awkwardly.
What do you do?
Text me.
No, that's pointing at your phone. That's like,
text me.
Check out my new, check out my
that's
half
like check
tablet,
out my
half
my
phone.
Man purse.
What am I looking at? What is going on here?
Brian, we're if you wanted somebody to text you.
1 hour, 53 minutes. That's what's going on.
Yeah, no. Brian, if you wanted someone to text you.
What's the universal gesture?
And your tongue had been cut out of your mouth.
Well, no, they're across the room, and you want to just let them know.
But you can't speak.
You can't speak.
Your door's wide shut.
This is not even a joke. What I love is grabbing people's attention from across the room. Like, I got their attention, and I'm like this, and then they look up, especially if they're in the middle of talking or like a live event. I'm like this, and I go. just to see
that
them
is
get
not
rattled.
The universal gesture for text me.
What was the gesture? What did he do?
I'm pretty sure
I
that's
said you're
not
number
it.
One.
You describe it for our listeners?
Yes, he did something we colloquially call flipping the bird.
Oh, Schwood.
Yes.
That was pretty
Schwood,
funny. Don't make me come to Texas.
No, Schwood, seriously, well, how do you do it? Like, how would you do it?
You know what? I'm like a, I don't know, this may be dated, but it's like I'm thinking of Star Trek. I'm like, beep, boop, beep, beep, boop, boop, like I'm holding something.
Like you're holding a StarTAC phone?
Like I'm holding a dead pigeon and trying to poke it back to life.
Why are you holding dead fowl, first of all?
Well, unhygienic. Come on, somebody in the audience, what would you do? You wanted to say, text me. Oh, they got it.
The
they're good.
This Wait, is what? It.
The Next thumbs.
How do you do that?
Thumbs.
I don't know. I like Brian's way better. It looked more fun.
But it doesn't communicate.
This works.
It does work.
What Brian's doing is not.
Okay, sorry. So I have another question.
Hey, Baratunde.
Now it looks like you're shooting me in a video game.
Yeah.
It's like you intend harm toward my avatar, is what that says.
People are calling it the Dean Stockwell, like from Quantum Leap. Like, I've got Ziggy. Ziggy says you need to text me. Yeah,
no, we're bringing out Quantum Leap references, Commodore 64.
All right, so I got one more. We got to go back to the 90s.
Okay.
All right. So when you were a kid and your parents said, you're like a broken record player, right? What will that be replaced by?
Oh, like what's on
because
loop?
Because broken like record CD players, CDs don't matter.
That's still a spinning disc.
You're like a stuck iPod.
You're like a DDoS attack, or like
I got it. You're like a John C. Dvorak, always saying the same thing over and over again.
I love how he threw Dvorak under the bus.
You're like a corrupt MP3.
You're like dubstep.
You're like dubstep.
There you go.
I love how people just add dubstep to things and think that makes it cool. I wanted the campaign ads next cycle.
Did you see any of the other shows this week on Twitch?
I actually missed.
That's good because we prepared something just for you.
I so wished you had done that.
This is Twit Know How. Oh my God.
Excuse me, sir. I'm with the mustache police. I'm going to have to take this.
Ham Nation.
Is that a cat costume or is that Pepe Le Pew you wear?
He's Ham Zero. Who?
Well, I'm not sure, but Julian, I think you've got something on the other side of your face. Julian had a little problem with one of our cats, but he'll be okay.
This Week in Computer Hardware.
So how did you get 8 hours of battery life out of it?
Well, we turned Wi-Fi and Bluetooth off and... and we played a video on the DVD. No, we had it actually cached in main system memory. And I just remember being like, and let me guess, screen 50%? Well, it was more like 25%, which we consider usable in a reasonable office environment.
Tech news today.
The Nokia Lumia 920 is shipping first to Rogers in Canada.
Wait, go back. What? Canada first?
Canada is now Canada.
Like all
that was terrible.
Twit, you heard me.
It's just mirth and merriment all
that's, I love how
long.
She made up a thing that's not real Canada and then turned it into a thing that's also Canada. Not real.
Canada.
That was hilarious. That's the quote of the week
Nick
from the Twit Network.
Nick writes at the New York Times. Follow him on the Bits blog. And I'll tell you, just look for his byline because it's just great stuff. You're doing such – what are you working on? I know you're working on a Twitter book.
I'm working on the Twitter book about the Twitter story. And it's also a story about the Valley over the last decade and trying to kind of explain how this place has worked. And fascinating
Can't
story.
Wait to read it. Do you have an ETA?
I have to deliver my first manuscript April 1st. But
almost a year from now.
No, it's not. Dude, it's like you don't almost know how a few months from now. Works. Yeah. But it'll be out
there's
next
an app
year.
To help
it'll
you
be out,
out
a year from now. But what's interesting is my publisher is Penguin, and they were just purchased by Random House, and I was hoping they were going to call them Random Penguin, but it turns out that's not the name.
Penguin House.
No, I'm really wondering. The problem with this is Twitter is a moving target. I mean, my God, this company's changed a lot.
Yes, but it's the book is really kind of going to. It's really a story of the Valley over the last decade.
Do you think they'll survive?
Absolutely, without a doubt. Irrelevant of any of my skin being in the game because of a book, because it's really not, because this is more of a history.
No. Yeah.
I think that in 50 years, Twitter will be around. I'm not necessarily sure I could say that about Facebook.
They're like
Ma
Bell.
I'll save this for the next time. But yes, they'll be around.
Why save anything?
All right, so look, here's my
You'll
theory.
Have more insights before.
So here's my theory. So social media was originally started to say, like, I'm eating a hamburger, I'm going for a walk. That is not what social media is today. It is people that are sharing information that they seek. It's what's happening. It's not what are you doing.
It's a digital nervous system.
Exactly. And I think that when you look at the fundamental difference between Facebook and Twitter is on Twitter, there is the thing called the humble brag. Because people – if you say – look, I just got featured in this magazine. People are like, humble brag, you're a douche.
Yeah.
But if you say that on Facebook, it's like, cool, okay. That's because Facebook is about you, and I believe that we don't – that we have – there is a finite amount of stuff we want to hear about us. We want to hear about
the world.
Things
wanna,
and the world
about
and media.
Sandy, yeah.
And that is where Twitter is.
And revolutions.
Facebook is not.
I love it. That's fascinating.
See, I always thought
it.
The humble brag was when, like, you acted like you're, like, you know, so humbled to be featured on the front page of Time. Like, that's it's the
humble brag is I'm gonna brag, but I know it's obnoxious and I'm gonna do it anyway.
Yeah. It's just a brag.
But
it's
you
a
can't brag. But you can't humble brag on Facebook because Facebook is
about you.
It's
all bragging.
You. But there, but people, there, it's
bragging,
exhausting.
It is considered not done on Twitter to spend too much time talking about, here's my latest. And is, people do that. It's spamming.
Absolutely. And this is the thing. I sent a tweet about this a while back, and I said, on Facebook, you start out you start out excited, and then you get Facebook fatigue. On Twitter, you start out with Twitter fatigue, and then you become excited.
It's actually the big challenge of the company is how do we get people to over that hump.
And they've worked on that with their onboarding process, with their recommendations, with other things.
And humping.
Yeah.
And humping.
That is Baratunde Thurston. God, yes, I miss you.
Oh, it's good to be
come
back.
Come back more
wait,
often.
That just happened. You just said, and humping, and then everyone just kept talking.
That's
like
how it is on Twitter.
Say.
We're on a forward momentum thing here.
This is a show you're going to want to listen to 5 or 6 times. There's so much good stuff in it that you might have missed.
I love this cast.
It is a very deep, rich river of crap. And you're going to want to listen again and again.
On
so,
the loop.
How to Be Black now in paperback?
HowToBeBlack.me is the website. We've got 50% off our hoodies.
So is this it?
This is not. This is.
I love this. This is a vote hoodie.
Hoodie vote. This is just encouraging people to vote across all communities.
And please do vote, everybody. Don't listen to Brian Brushwood. It does matter.
I don't mean don't vote. I mean don't vote for the Crips and the Bloods.
Yeah. Vote for the Crips or vote for the Bloods, because any other vote is a throwaway vote. So, if you vote for Roseanne Barr, you're just protesting.
Choose
a Crip or a Blood, please.
I don't take that position.
Just
vote. So the latest thing I'm working on at Cultivated Wit is this YourExcuseSucks.com, which is about shaming your friends and their terrible excuses into not voting and encountering
that. YourExcuseSucks.com.
Yeah, it'll That's be great. Super live in a few hours.
Oh, it's not live yet.
It's live. It's temporarily live. There's
so
we're
going to bring
vows.
It down?
No, you can't bring it down.
Oh.
I've got
you
some
can
really.
Take
we're
it
not
down.
Quite
I mean, that's not
ready
a threat.
To begin
that's not a challenge. Like, don't try to bring it down. But we have some good
what am I supposed to put in this box? Am I supposed to say why your excuse sucks?
You're supposed to put your email in there. You're supposed to read the page before asking
I'm
questions.
So not into that whole reading thing.
What am I, Mr. New York Times reporter? What do I do?
I don't understand how this works. Where do I put my keyboard?
Why do you have a southern accent all of a sudden, British man?
He's from Britain. He sounds like he's from Brooklyn, and I don't get it. Anyway, great to have you, Baratunde.
Great to
congratulations.
Be back. Always a pleasure.
Good
seriously.
Luck on Tuesday.
Yes, thank
good
you. Luck.
Where will you be on Tuesday?
I will actually, because of Sandy, I will be in Brooklyn for half of the
flying
day. I'm flying back to cast my vote because my absentee got washed away. And then I'll be back in San Francisco Tuesday evening
good
to
man.
Watch the results.
That's
I have to say, cheers to Baratunde for flying back to vote. Good for you, man.
My excuse sucks.
I mean, it's not very good for the environment, but, you know.
I'll toast you. Even though, yeah. That's it. It's like, literally, you're going to burn. Think about your carbon footprint to go cast a vote that's not going to affect the outcome in any way whatsoever.
Dearest hater, let me explain the ways that I care about democracy in America more than you.
Are you going to vote, Brian?
Yeah, I already voted.
Yeah.
I voted. Newsflash, pretty sure Texas is going to go for Romney. So rather than voting for either of the two big parties, I made a big difference and voted Libertarian. I voted for Gary Johnson, and I'm proud.
There you go. Good for you, man.
Did you guys see the graphic on the Time site? The 512 space of the White House is beautiful. It's on the homepage, and you can click
that, by the way, another thing, I'll give you a little props to the New York Times. It's been a big challenge, I'm sure, to go from a print newspaper to a digital newspaper, but they have really embraced digital in a way that I think no one else has done.
You know what was the telltale sign for me? Was the fact that I don't have cable TV because I cut my cable.
You're a modern
time
person.
Yes. And I actually watched the debates on the New York Times website.
I watched
live.
Them on YouTube.
So, but it's interesting. You wouldn't think that the New York Times would be the place that you would go to watch live television.
No, they were the stream of record.
And they were the stream of record. This is gorgeous. So,
now, is this Nate Silver's?
No,
doing
this is
or?
The graphics department that did this, and they've been working on this for quite a while. It's
wow. Like, so it's a decision tree.
So you can click on. So if you say okay,
we're looking at ways to win.
If Obama wins Florida, then he wins Ohio.
That's
then
amazing.
He
wins.
Then he wins.
If you go to the right and you say
if Obama wins Ohio, then and North Carolina, he wins. But if but there's not a lot of paths for Romney.
So
he's got to win Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, Virginia, and Wisconsin.
Obama has 431 ways to win, and Romney has 76. And there's 5.
And this has nothing
ties.
To do with stats exactly. It's just the Electoral College,
correct? But it's showing this the current. It's also based that this
it's
assumption
polling, right?
is taking the current poll.
So it is.
So if you go to the top, you can click on like you can say Republican, Republican, Republican for all these states.
That's right.
And really, it comes down to, as it always does, Ohio and Florida.
Isn't that weird that they basically for the last few elections have
kind
determined
of decided who
president.
Our president
as goes
will be?
Ohio, yeah. So goes the nation.
Yeah. Brian Brushwood has having a baby.
That's as we refer to it, Untitled Brushwood Project, due in late December.
Sounds like a Kickstarter.
It's Indiegogo. Indiegogo.com/scam. What is it?
Scam stuff.
Indiegogo.com/scam stuff.
And did you notice what the $10,000 donation was at? Hold on.
I thought that was hysterical. I think we talked about it on one of the shows.
There it is right there. Name the new Brushwood kid. You can give a middle name to my kid. If you like.
Baratunde.
That's,
I would love to brand your child.
Bonnie Baratunde Brushwood. Wow, that's a lot of bees.
In all seriousness, one of the things I'm doing is I'm trying to book as many live stage shows up until the 24th so I can take paternity leave. So we actually have like half price stage shows on that Indiegogo if you guys check it out.
And his,
if you have a corporate party, like a Christmas deal, then now's the time to book.
I learned a lot from Brian. I saw him do a show in New York at a university up in the Bronx. And I've heard him through Twit. We've talked and argued on like three different podcasts for the past 3 years. His show is amazing. So if you have a shot see Brian Brushwood live, do his native thing with the fire and the jokes and the tech. He's like the future of magic in so many ways. So go see that.
Wow, dude, that's going straight on my website now. That. The Future of Magic by Baratunde.
Happy to endorse you, man. Really good stuff.
That's awesome, man. Thanks.
What a great panel. I am the past of podcasting, and I'm glad to have been here. I'm going now, and I all wish you the best.
And everybody in the studio, you all get books, so don't leave without your book.
Don't leave without your book.
Yeah. I have some really bad news, guys. What? I've heard Ellen bats for the other team.
Oh, man. That's why you were so cute together. I always thought you were gay, too,
because it was Mission Impossible.
I thought it was the together.
So here I was going out with a nice positive shot, and then Leo just, you know.
That wasn't a negative.
And now he's hugging me.
That was just my way of
saying... He's looking through his porn goggles at you.
Would you like to go to Australia?
I don't go that direction.
South? You don't go down under?
That is such a rap, ladies and gentlemen. That's like three raps in one.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think it would be a prudent time to wrap up the show, but I thank you all for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, because of the time change, we went off summertime, so we are actually now on standard time, and that means UTC, which does not change, but our time UTC has changed to 2300 UTC. I think we add 8 now. 2100, I'm sorry. 2100 UTC.
Some number, and the letters UTC.
I got to figure it out.
You're looking at me like I might know, and I don't.
Chad Johnson's our producer. He knows it all. 2300 UTC? Okay, thank you. Plus 8. So that'd be 2100, 3 p.m. Pacific plus 8 is 2100. But you're saying 2300. Everybody's saying 2300. That's why it's confusing. Dude, and the funny thing
we
is...
We need, like, star date.
Nobody lives on UTC time.
Captain's log.
It's just a...
Star date.
It's a star date.
We need that.
Never mind. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
You guys are great. It is really my favorite. I can't say my favorite because I have other favorites, but this is really one of my
favorite. No, you can say your favorite.
It is my favorite.
You can say your favorite.
You guys are rocking. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
And don't forget to vote.
Is in the can.
Or don't.
Wow.
You hater.
Wow. That was the Four Musketeers. Really great way to end it.